Don't put my name on there. Put Jay Hudson's name on there, because he does all the listening. And he gives it to me, and we play it for you. All right, so that's how that works. And, of course, you can always email us, Doug@WRIF.com or Jay@WRIF.com to get your stuff played here. Let's close it out. Peter Werby's coming up with Night Call, but let's close it out with this new one, Breakdown. Tell me a little bit about this. It's a song about your sister. She's not going to get mad, is she?
No, she's not going to get mad at all. She knows I wrote it about her. She was going through some very difficult times, you know, and life was just crazy for her. And she called me one day and she just said, you know, I'm just tired. You know, she was like, I don't, you know, it wasn't that bad, but she, you know, she was just tired of everything that was going on in her life. So I just figured
I'd
help her express it, you know, some way so she could get it off of her chest.
All right.
That's just what I wrote it for.
That's good stuff. All right. Well, we'll see you guys Thursday over at the Emerald for the CD release party. Thanks for Harley Fest, by the way.
Oh, thanks for having us again.
Job. And let's close it out with Breakdown from Critical Bill from 313 right here on Motor City Riffs. See you guys.
We're now going to progress to some steps which are a bit more difficult.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Breakdown!
Torn. I couldn't walk in the shoes she wore. Once full of life, now she mourns. There was a time she wore a crown, I was replaced with thorns. And all the pain she bears. Beautiful outside, but all the scars she wears. She feels no one's there. And when she needs love most, feels that no one cares.
Another job and you had enough. And the pain is about to erupt. Feel like you couldn't ever get enough. I see you about to cut it down. Don't keep your head up. The pain's coming in from all around. I know everything has got you down. It feels like you're tired and brown. But if you head up, it's only a breakdown.
Denied so hard to live life, and every time she dies, behind the smile it hides, and you can see it in her eyes, and the pain still lies, and every time she cries, it makes her colder, dealing with the weight of the world there on her shoulders, I hope it doesn't mold her, all she needs now is someone there to hold her.
I know you're tired and you had enough, and the pain is about to erupt, feel like you could let it give enough, I see when life's got you down, but keep your head up, the pain's coming in from all around. I know everything's got you down. It feels like you're tied to the ground. But keep your head up, it's only a breakdown.
Stand up, keep your head up. The only one to help you is you. The only one to help you is you. The only one to help you is you.
Sunday night, The Riff is your home of the best local music in Detroit. And now, every Thursday night, US 12 on Michigan Avenue in Wayne is the home of the Motor City's best live local music. Ladies, you always get in free at US 12. Plus, US 12 is the place to go see live local rock talent every Thursday night in Metro Detroit. Want to see the best up-and-coming talent in the Motor City? US 12 in Wayne is the club that breaks all the bands. Come on by US 12 this Thursday and check it out for yourself.
Hey, this is Jay Hudson from Motor City Riffs. Come by US 12 in Wayne this Thursday night for live local rock from some of the Motor City's finest.
It's the Riffs' one-year anniversary at US 12 with the Dirty Americans, Ugly, Matt Mortigan, and Beaver Street Saints.
Don't forget, CDs and merchandise are available at the show.
And if you're interested in getting in on the bill, check out US 12's ad in Real Detroit Weekly.
Make sure you come out to US 12 in Wayne every Thursday night to hear Detroit's best local music. US 12 is right on Michigan Avenue at 2nd Street, just east of Wayne Road. We'll be right back.
US 12, the club that supports local music. McGregor's is giving you fun in the sun this summer. Join 101 WRIF every Tuesday in June for the Golden Tee Challenge, featuring the new and improved 2006 Golden Tee. Compete with your friends and win great rip prizes, including tickets to the Ford Senior Players Championship at the TPC of Michigan in Dearborn, July 7th through 10. Enjoy live acoustic music on the newly improved patio that you can enjoy rain or shine. While you're there, test your skills for charity with a putting contest with proceeds benefiting the Penrickton Center for the Blind. Stop by anytime and enjoy McGregor's extensive menu and check out their new summer menu items. McGregor's is the place for food, fun, and the best local music every weekend. Join 101 WRIF at McGregor's this Tuesday for tons of fun and prizes, including your chance to win tickets to the Ford Senior Players Championship and the live acoustic session with EverydayThing.com. McGregor's at Telegraph Road near West Road in Brownstown Township. Call them for more info at 734-675-3870.
Try Dunkin' Donuts' new blueberry or coconut-flavored iced coffee. It's refreshing, invigorating, and delicious. Dunkin' Donuts, bring yourself back. Price and participation may vary.
Yeehaw! Well, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Jeep Charlie from Mark Chevrolet. Now, why do they call me Jeep Charlie? Because Mark Chevrolet sells Chevy so cheap, no one can beat our deals. We even hired a big announcer to tell you about it. Go ahead, announcer boy.
Now at Mark Chevrolet, remember, everyone gets the GM family discount. Check out these specials. Cobalt, $149 a month. Impalas, $228 a month. Trailblazer 4-wheel drive LS, $239 a month. The Equinox 4-wheel drive LS is just $249 a month. Remember, everyone receives the GM discount, including businesses. Based on a 36-month lease, security deposit waived for lease loyalty. Includes CCR, bonus cash, and down payment. Tax, title, and license not included.
Well, thank you. Hey, and remember, if you think their new cars are cheap, you want to see Mark Chevrolet's great selection of used cars. Well, they're so cheap, even the birds are singing cheap, cheap, cheap. You've heard them. If you like that new car smell, we got a car to sell. Mark Chevrolet, Michigan Avenue in Wayne. Get there.
Catch the excitement of the 2005 Major League Baseball All-Star Game at Comerica Park July 10th through 12th. Budweiser and 101 WRIM for giving you the chance to score big with a pair of passes to every event. The Taco Bell All-Star Legends and Celebrity Softball Game. The Century 21 Home Run Derby. And the 2005 Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Plus, we'll hook you up with passes to Budweiser VIP events, hospitality, and more. Just keep it locked on the RIP for your chance to win. Register in person at RIP All-Star Game parties across the Motor City. Or pick up an entry form at the 2005 Major League Baseball All-Star Game display at participating Budweiser retailers. Get in the game with Budweiser. Grab a cold, fresh Budweiser. It's game time. And 101 WRIF.
You're listening to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's Phone-In Talk Show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Oh, yeah. I'm here. But I'm probably like about three-quarters of our usual listeners watching the San Antonio-Detroit finals of the NBA. It's tied 61-61 right now. And can you do what I'm doing? Watch it and listen to the broadcast. I'm sorry. That's right. Watch the playoffs and listen to the broadcast. Although, maybe nobody's listening. Hello? Is anyone out there? Hello! If you are, call 313-298-WRIF. But you don't even know, if you're just tuning in, you might not even know what this is all about. This is WRIF's, what do we call it? Public affairs programming. That's right. We get to talk about the issues of the day. We start at 11 o'clock. Normally, we're not in the middle of playoffs where Detroit and San Antonio are tied 61-61. The games, if you're listening for far away, and you're going, what, Pistons? What the hell is that? San Antonio, isn't that a town in Texas? Well, this is real to the people of the Motor City. And the series is tied 2-2. And there's about, let me see, what is it? I can't see too well here. It's almost to the fourth quarter. So, and it's tied 2-2. We're playing at the Palace. And so then it's back to San Antonio. And so that the Pistons have to win this game. So, all right, people are calling. That's cool. That's very cool. I'm glad to know that that's happening. Already, Joe's waiting. And have some patience. If you hold on long enough with your ring, our producer, Jay Hudson, will get a hold of you. All right, we've got some fun ahead. Got an incredible album. called Dick is a Killer. You can go to thepartyparty.com, thepartyparty.com, and actually you can download all this music. And Dick is a Killer, we're going to probably play that at as soon as the game's over, as soon as all of you listeners are back here. Also, I see the Inkster crew is ready to roll. Are you guys all in the same house out in Inkster, Michigan there? And then at midnight Eastern time, we are going to revisit our Imagine contest. Remember, we kind of had a, what'd you call it? I'm thinking playoffs again, between the original John Lennon's incredible song, Imagine, with the most radical lyrics imaginable. And I've always wondered, why is that so popular with such incredibly radical lyrics? Imagine there's no country, no possessions, no war, you know, all of that. A brotherhood of man. I mean, that just must send the chills down the spine of any conservative, right? All right. Well, assuming, since people are starting to call in, that there's some of you listening, let me give you the, not just watching watching the Pistons and listening to this broadcast. This is a Night Call show. I'm Peter Werby, broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan. We're streaming on both WRIF.com and RadioPower.org, and we're going all around the country and all around the world. So, as I said, what's going on the basketball court? Detroit's up now 63-61. All right, I'm going to focus on this. I'm going to focus on this because this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So, let's see. We're going to be doing a rebroadcast of this program tomorrow at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern at radiopower.org. And then it's all archived, as are all these shows going back years, at whiterosesociety.org. You can find out all this information, if this is going by too quickly, at peterwerby.com, PETERWERBE.com. Tons of new information on there, particularly about the Downing Street memo. You think, Downing Street memo? What the hell is that? We will talk about that just in a minute. If you prefer to email me, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And keep them short. You might get them read on the air. If they're real long, I can't even read them now. Okay. Michael Jackson was acquitted, and it's funny. I ran into somebody, a neighbor of mine, my neighborhood, and he was outraged, just absolutely outraged that Michael Jackson had been found not guilty on all charges. And that was what? That was way back. That's almost ancient history now, isn't it? I don't necessarily want to talk about that, but what struck me, he had this incredible outrage going. It's a guy's damn child molester going on like that. And I kind of waited him out, and then I started talking about this Downing Street memo that essentially nails the Bush administration as a pack of liars for its rationalization for going into Iraq for the invasion, that they'd planned war all along, that was the sole interest that they had was war and occupation. War and occupation is all that the Bush administration intended. It wasn't anything about weapons of mass destruction. They knew there were none. And now it's all come out. Now we should be talking impeachment. Where are these Democrats? Come on! The Republicans tried to impeach a sitting president because he lied about getting a BJ. Here's an administration and a president that looked in the eyes of the American people and lied square on about a threat that never existed. Scared the hell out of all of us. I mean, not all of us. Didn't scare the hell out of me, because I knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. So did many of you. Some of you. Wait, where is that letter? I thought this was very important. But anyway, let me just finish this story. So the neighbor's outraged that Michael Jackson was acquitted of all charges, and I started telling him about the Downing Street memo that has to do with the loss of life of over 1,700 American soldiers and the severe wounding of about 12,000. So we're talking about casualties of importance in this Iraq war of 15,000, about weapons of mass destruction that never even existed. An administration that knew that and lied to the American people. And as the Downing Street memo said, that the facts fit around the policy. They fit the facts around the policy. They made up stuff, essentially. I mean, they're even being too nice. But as I began to explain this to him about the Downing Street memo, I could really tell he really wasn't very interested. And I finished, and he said, since I didn't really respond to the Michael Jackson acquittal and his indignation. He said to me, well, don't you think he's a child molester? And I said, I don't know. And he looked at me kind of curiously, again, getting real suspicious. Like, why was I defending this guy? I said, oh, I don't have any idea. And because I never really looked into this case very much. But it shows you where our priorities are. And well, here's an email from someone from last week. They wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And I don't want to say their name because I'm really taking this out of context because I'm using it for a different purpose. So I'm sorry because I know, well, he wrote and supported Bush pretty much. And but then he said, before you take any offense, like somehow disagreeing with me, I would take offense, but I didn't. And he said, I have to warn you, I do lack the knowledge to stand behind my comments. I'm pretty much speaking on behalf of myself as a simple, honest question from outside looking in, not trying to ask a question to stir up the beehive of political rights and wrongs. Well, what is important here is I have to warn you, I do lack the knowledge to stand behind my comments. And what essentially he's saying is, he's getting a genuine feeling as a human being, and he's working off of that, but he doesn't know much about the situations involved. That he doesn't know about the Downing Street memo, I assume, and he doesn't know the details of it, and he hasn't looked at this for months and now years. Well, what does that tell us? I mean, should people be entering the public sphere with opinions very strong that the consequences of which are death and destruction? I mean, I would say not. All right, let's just go into this just a little more. The Downing Street memo. These were, let me see if I, this is not the easiest thing really to summarize, but it was a series, first a memo, then a series of memos put out by the government of England. Very concerned about the direction that the United States was going in. These were like around July 2002. This is just when Bushby was beginning to notice there were weapons and there was a threat, a gathering threat, isn't that what they called it? And they started talking about we didn't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud, and that they knew that they had all these hundreds of tons of stockpiled poison weapons and what have you. And this and the British were very concerned about it. Here's one that just came in. When Prime Minister Tony Blair's chief foreign policy advisor dined with Condoleezza Rice 6 months after September 11th, that's even earlier, the then U.S. National Security Advisor didn't want to discuss Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, led by Osama bin Laden, had just hit the United States with the most catastrophic strike ever, more than Pearl Harbor. And here's what she wanted to talk about. Regime change in Iraq, setting the stage for the U.S.-led invasion more than a year later. Bush wanted Blair's support, but British officials worried the White House was rushing to war, according to a series of leaked Downing Street memos that have renewed questions and debate about Washington's motives for ousting Saddam Hussein. Now, here's what you can do if you're still a little foggy about what these are. You can go to downingstreetmemo.com. Downing, like D-O-W-N-I-N-G. That's 10 Downing Street is where Prime Minister Blair and all the prime ministers live. DowningStreetMemo.com, or even better, after DowningStreet.org. Our own John Conyers, Congressman John Conyers of Detroit, you can go to his website at JohnConyers.com. And he held a hearing on Thursday, and the Republicans did everything they could to not allow this, not to give him space in the congressional hearing building and what have you. And finally, he got a small room, and he swore in four people to give testimony about the Downing Street memo and what they saw. Well, Democrats, and some of them are now, including John Conyers, talking about impeachment. High crimes and misdemeanors have been committed by the Bush administration. You see, maybe Democrats Thursday tried to build a case for impeachment of Bush for allegedly taking the nation to war in Iraq on false premises. The Conyers hearing lacked official standing because it was not authorized by the Republican leaders of the House. The hearing was held in a Capitol hideaway conference room under the control of Representative Nancy Pelosi, the House Democratic leader from California. after Representative James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, the Republican chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, had rejected Conyers' request to use a more spacious committee hearing room. Nonetheless, the forum involved all the trappings of an official congressional inquiry, including sworn testimony, U.S. flags, and coverage by C-SPAN. Conyers publicly demanded that Bush, quote, explain his actions for going to war on what may have been false pretenses and false information. The inquiry was triggered by the publication last month of secret minutes of the British War Cabinet in July 2002, indicating that Bush deceived Congress 8 months before the invasion of Iraq when he publicly claimed he was pressing for a diplomatic end to the standoff over suspected weapons of mass destruction when he was secretly laying the groundwork for war. Tommy Franks, by July 2002, had already submitted the second battle plan. So, I mean, they knew this was going because they wanted to invade. Bush wanted to invade Iraq. And also, he wanted to what going on now, disastrously, he wants to occupy Iraq. They talk about one of the criticisms that Bush has no exit strategy. You know why they don't have any exit strategy? They don't plan on exiting. This is the spoils of war. This is going to be a U.S. puppet state, an imperial outpost to control oil, to ensure that oil in that region is traded in dollars and not in euros, and to have forward bases in that area, what is it, 6,000 miles from home, to continue U.S. hegemony, you know, dominance, control of that region and anything in the immediate area. And some of you may say, well, what the hell? That's not a bad idea. We get cheap gas. I mean, it's not happening, right? It just went up to like $58 a barrel. And what the hell? You know, we'd lose 3,000-4,000 Americans, maybe get 20,000-25,000 wounded. But then at the end, I mean, these are young, mostly working class men and women, some older reserve guys. But what the hell? You know, we'll eventually wind up with cheap gas. We'll have this control of the world. And that'll all just be swimming. What do they call it? Swimmingly or something. In any event, in the meantime, our country goes more and more into debt. I care a little bit more about the people that are being forced to fight over there. I care a lot about the people that they're killing, the civilians, the somewhere between 30 and 100,000 civilians that have lost their lives at the hands of the U.S. Armed Forces to, quote, liberate them. And the idea that we can control the world by controlling resources, by controlling currency, is a pipe dream. We are going down the drain of every empire that ever existed on this planet, from Rome to Britain. You say, oh, wow, Britain's still around. I know. But the big empires, and the more they controlled, the more area of the world they controlled, the more bad effect it had on the home country. Because you have to start spending more and more money on military. I mean, we're spending $500 billion a year on the military. As the country goes into debt, as we can offer less and less to our own people, as schools lay off teachers, as roads go bad, as we're cutting cops and firemen. And this isn't Detroit. This is rural areas. They're cutting subsidies for a national transportation system, Amtrak. They're saying, why should the government give a subsidy to a rail system? Well, every rail system in the world worth the name is subsidized by the government as a service to the citizens. Every industrial country in the world has a full-paid national health care program. But that's all going down the drain of war and empire. All right. So the Democrats are, some of them, are talking about impeachment. And I think it's here, the evidence. The inquiry, it says here in this article, from the Hearst papers. That's interesting. The Hearst paper used to beat the drums of war for another one of U.S.'s absolutely unnecessary imperial wars, the Spanish-American War. That was when, remember, the battleship Maine was sunk in Havana Harbor. It turned out that was a pure fabrication that the Spanish had done that. That was just the excuse they were looking for to take Spain's possessions from it. A couple of which we still control, right? Like Guam. The minutes that we're talking about here were dubbed the Downing Street memo because the meeting was held at 10 Downing Street. The document quotes Sir Richard Dearlove, then head of British intelligence, telling the meeting, the meetings in Washington showed a perceptible shift in attitude to the point where the U.S. military action against Iraq was, quote, now seen as inevitable. And I'm looking for that that phrase where they say that the intelligence was, I don't want to misquote, but essentially they're saying the intelligence was twisted to fit policy. So when we know this, with the pressure that Dick Cheney put upon the intelligence services. Now, there's also something like 122 congressional Democrats that have been asking the White House. Oh, here it is. The White House refuses to respond to a May 5th letter from 122 congressional Democrats about whether there was a coordinated effort to fix the intelligence and facts around the policy, as the Downing Street memo says. They say, oh, you know, Conyers is just trying to rehash old debates. Conyers, about half a dozen other members of Congress, went to the White House on Thursday and hand-delivered petitions signed by 560,000 Americans who want Bush to provide a detailed response to the Downing Street memo. When Conyers, they wouldn't let him in. One person with him yelled, send Bush out. Eventually, White House aides retrieved the petitions in the back and took them to the West Wing. Where do you think they put them? You know, do you think they they said, well, we better read these? Oh, over 500,000 American citizens are so concerned about this. I'm sure they just threw them right in the trash. Now, citizen action. Stop being a spectator to life. Get directly involved. There's enough out there. I mean, you should have made up your mind by now about what the hell is going on. And also, the proof is there that active citizens can do stuff. Everything from bringing out 1 million people in New York to in anti-war demonstrations to a little small delegation of which I was part of on Friday, where we went to the office of Representative Sander Levin, who represents Oakland and Macomb County outside of Detroit, and he had not signed on to this letter that was put out by 122 other congressional Democrats asking for a response to the Downing Street memo. So we walked in there, and we were going to say, why the hell doesn't Sandy Levin, you know, and his aide greeted us and said, it was sitting on his desk, and he got around to doing it, and he signed on to it. So it was sitting on his desk. He knew it was there, and if we hadn't made the effort to go out there and to announce that we were going to get essentially in his face about this, he probably never would have signed it. So you can fight City Hall, and it's an imperative to fight City Hall. Now, the liars of the Bush administration are continuing. Condoleezza Rice went on the Republican propaganda apparatus, Fox News, today, and she said she was asked if the Bush administration fairly can be criticized for failing to level with the American people about how long and difficult this commitment will be. And here's what Rice said. The administration, I think, has said to the American people that it is a generational commitment in Iraq. A generational commitment in Iraq. That's how long it's going to take. But that's not true. You have to remember, in building support for the war, we said this was going to be an easy deal. Dick Cheney said on March 16th, 2003, my belief is we will, in fact, be greeted as liberators. I think it will go relatively quickly in weeks rather than months. Secretary of War Donald Rumsfeld, why hasn't he been fired? Hasn't he screwed up enough? But anyways, he said on February 7, 2003, it's unknowable how long that conflict will last. It could last 6 days, 6 weeks. I doubt it will last 6 months. Been a little more than that, hasn't it? Former Budget Director Mitch Daniels on March 28, 2003, said the United States is committed to helping Iraq recover from the conflict, but Iraq will not require sustained aid. Well, we spent somewhere between $200 and $300 billion. That's how much we've spent. And we're not going to be spending any more money over there. Well, they're talking about permanent military bases, which will cost, of course, cost billions. And already, let's see here, 2 years after the invasion, this is from United Press International, after the invasion of Iraq, the United States has spent almost $1 billion on U.S. embassy operations, but none of that has been put forward towards building a permanent home for the U.S. diplomatic presence. I mean, so what did they spend it on? Where does $1 billion go? I mean, our whole community doesn't make that much in a lifetime, $1 billion. This is all our money. However, they plan on spending for the embassy, the largest in the world. This is why I say they don't have any exit strategy, because they don't intend any exit. They're going to spend $1.3 billion for an embassy there. And if they say at the beginning it's going to cost $1.3 billion, how much do you think it's really, really going to take? All right, I say impeach Bush. Get him out of there. All right, that's my opinion. Let's take our first caller right now, and I've been yakking, man, haven't I? Here is Joe in Ypsilanti. Joe, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting so long.
Hey, thanks for taking me, Pete.
Sure.
Geez. you really laid it out there, man. There, you know, a couple quick formalities to lay out there. Forget the Michael Jackson case. You know, that's OPB. It's sad, you know, that this girl down here in Aruba is missing, but again, you know, it's OPB. Does that affect me in my life?
Right. Remind people what OPB means. It means other people's business. Yeah. That's why this is the bread and circuses. Remember they had that in Rome to divert the population from the corruption and the disintegration of Imperial Rome. And now this is our bread and circuses. We get to watch the stuff that doesn't affect us at all.
Great point. You know, it leads me to a couple of side thoughts that kind of came to my head while I was on hold. You know, what's the first order of power? To retain power.
Sure. Any bureaucracy.
You know, and what's the last thing? What's the last action of every government?
What's that?
To loot the country.
Okay.
It's just been a party here at my house ever since Thursday, ever since that hearing. God bless John Conyers.
Yeah, yeah.
God bless that man. God bless Cindy Sheehan.
Cindy Sheehan is amazing. Cindy Sheehan is the co-founder of Gold Star Mothers for Peace. She lost her son in Iraq. She's emerged as this eloquent anti-war spokesperson that can almost bring you to tears every time she opens her mouth.
And she does.
Yeah, she does.
She's the hallmark of bravery.
She is.
To make the admission to herself that her son died for a lie.
Yeah.
And to not only do that, but to turn around and go out there and try and convince others of that. And how hard is that?
I know, and there's been any number of fathers, and I was thinking of particularly a guy that's been very active, mothers and fathers that have been active in the anti-war movement. In fact, in the Conyers hearing on Thursday around the Downing Street memo, there was actually a man who'd lost his son in Iraq from Britain, to the British Army. All right, thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in from Ypsilanti, a Greek general, right? I think, or either Jay Hudson is so wound up in the game. We're in the last 5 minutes, and Detroit is leading 75-74, kind of a low-scoring game. But anyways, or sometimes this damn thing just doesn't work well. All right, here is Will. Will, you're calling from Ontario, are you?
Yes, I am, Peter. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thanks for making our show international.
Thank you. You're welcome. I'm a first-time caller. You're sort of a voice in the wilderness and sort of a picture of sanity for us Canadians, sort of hanging on, hoping that we can get tuned into some American media that gives a bit of a reality check to what's going on in the world today. I don't know where to start. A couple of points, I guess, is you're speaking about the Downing Street memo. I know you're trying to introduce this to your audience, and I think that's a valuable piece of evidence. But I guess what shocks us, like from a Canadian perspective, well, it doesn't shock us because we watch your media. We're exposed to the BBC, the CBC. So I think, and then we watch your Fox News and as well as your major network and cable channels, CNN, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we see the perspective the American people get. And I think we have maybe a keener understanding of why it's taken some people so long to to get a grasp on what the Bush administration has been doing. With all due respect, this information, like as I know that you know, has been before the war. We sat and watched on TV as Bush was going, as your president was going before the making the State of the Union addresses and telling lie after lie and changing the mission's objective every couple of months. And we started, I know myself and people I talk with in Canada, we started wondering about the short-term memory loss of how you, I don't know if it's just if it's watching too much TV in the United States, but people, they seem to forget what was said a month before, and they just seem to, I know your callers seem to be a little more astute, but they tend to buy into this propaganda argument.
Well, it's kind of hard. You know, the idea of that old expression of the big lie, and one of the ways you promote the big lie is say it over and over and over again through the official channels of communication of a society, and then you start feeling kind of weird if you're not in the big consensus.
Well, I know, I'll bet that's true. Like, I'd like to think, you know, I'd like to think that a majority of the American people know in their gut that something is wrong, and they've just been intimidated to speak out. They're afraid to speak out. We're a little free here because, of course, as you know, I mean, we've always been a strong ally of the United States, but we did not go along with this one. We're sitting this one out. Our prime minister objected and said we would not go along with this. Of course, he used the excuse that it wasn't a United Nations sanctioned move, but it's really because he did not trust or like the Bush administration. I know that, and that's a common sentiment around the world.
Well, let me interrupt you here. Yeah. Actually, I was just about to say, let me go to a break. But
sure.
One of the, you know, I was saying that every industrial nation in the world, other than the United States, has a nationally funded health program, but yes. There's been, without going into all the details about this mm-hmm. Quebec case and everything, that that there has the program in Canada isn't funded enough, and that's why there's been a lot of waiting and voluntary surgery and some procedures and what
there,
have
there
you.
Has, well, I have a personal, you know, I have a personal tale I could tell, and you're right, there has been.
Okay, but wait. Okay. Here's what I'm saying. Okay. Why doesn't Canada disband its army? There's only one country that it is ever in danger of being invaded from, which is the United States.
Right.
The United States has an invasion and occupation plan for every country in the world, including Canada. No other country in the world has anything like that. Maybe a few of them have, they think, well, the country's next to them. But the Canada has no need for an army whatsoever. In terms of any big invasion from Asia or I can't even imagine where else, the United States would handle that. So here's what I advocate. Canada disband its army. What do you think?
Well, we don't have much. We only have our army is comprised of 80,000 members, which is nothing, really.
Well, but wait a minute. It's nothing, but what if they took all the money being spent on that and applied it to the health care program that the federal government...
I'll give you two answers to that.
What's
one, do we need, in order to have a voice as a moderate power in the United Nations, Canadians' armed forces, our armed forces are not built as a war-fighting machine. We do peacekeeping missions. Our soldiers are trained not so much for aggressive combat as they are for maintaining or coming in after the combat and actually doing more like a constabulary or police type of mission, and it gives us some say in the United Nations. It gives us some power, some influence, and that's why you see Canadian troops. We're in Rwanda. We've been in Sinai. We've been in Cyprus. We're in Afghanistan with American troops. We tend to go through the United Nations because we're a middle power, and that's where we have our most influence.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. There goes my idea. That's a good answer to it. But I'm way late playing my commercials. Thank you, Will, and please call us again. And let's see, right now, San Antonio and Detroit all tied up 79-79 with just about 3 minutes left. We're going to take a break. Jay Hudson, answer those calls and stop watching the television like I am. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to WRIF.com. And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prices valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prices are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any price for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, One Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
Bill Bonds with a commercial. If you're near or farsighted and you want to throw away those glasses forever, I know a doctor you should see. Dr. Escombati. Phone number 1-877, then the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E. 1-877-UC-MORE. The equipment, the finest high-tech equipment ever made. Price $999 per eye. So don't fall for those $200 prices you hear being tossed around on the radio. Cows don't fly. Neither do those prices, unless your daddy is an eye doctor and you're getting a freebie. Dr. Escombati, no doctor we know of has a better success rate. Procedure is fast, safe, cost $999 per eye. Virtually painless, you're in and out, maybe 40 minutes. Procedure itself, maybe 5. When it's over, you'll want to kiss your glasses goodbye and hug the doctor. Or maybe you guys will just want to give him a high-five, shake hands with him, walk away, and see a whole new world. See ya.
Anglers, get ready to cast your line for big money. The OSI Pro Series WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Championship Series is underway, and there's still time to enter to win the $1,500 Series Championship. Sign up now for the Bass Championship going out of Lake Erie Metro Park on July 30th. Slots will fill up fast, so get your entry in now. Compete for thousands of dollars in cash and prizes, including the DMF Bait Award for the kid under 16 landing the largest fish on live bait. It's all going to be given away to the best fishing team in town, so sign up now by calling 248-591-6841 or go to WRIF.com for an entry form. There will be fun for everyone at the post-event party at Big Al Sports Grill, so call 248-591-6841 to become the OSI Pro Series WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today. Brought to you by OSI Pro Series, the DMF Bait Company, Big Al Sports Grill, and 101 WRIF.
Every day, employers search for people skilled in today's technology. Are you ready for a change to a new career? Make a difference for yourself by calling the ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-396-6622. Find out how an ITT Tech can help you prepare for a career in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Now is your chance to make a difference for yourself, to start a new path to a career involving technology. Find out what an ITT Tech education can offer you. Call 1-800-396-6622 for an ITT Tech brochure. Classes are forming now, so call ITT Tech at 1-800-396-6622. That's 1-800-396-6622.
Hey, Tigers fans, this summer, why sit at home when you could sit at home? Like that is. Now is a great time to catch all the fun and excitement happening at every Detroit Tigers home game. You'll see plenty of homers by Pudge Rodriguez, Dimitri Young, Carlos Guillen, and all your favorite players. But a trip to Comerica Park means more than just baseball. While the Tigers are driving home runs, you could drive home in a brand new car during the Chevy Cobalt Drive One Home Giveaway, sponsored by your Detroit area Chevy dealers. Just buy a ticket to select Friday or Saturday night home games, and you could drive one out of here. Looking for a surefire hit? Hey, don't miss Friday and Saturday night fireworks, sponsored by Pepsi and Verizon Wireless. And with a weekend value pack, that's four tickets, four hot dogs, and four Pepsis for just $59. And you'll want to bring everyone from home. So for great giveaways like autographed balls, bobbleheads, collector cards, and jerseys, and for great baseball, this summer, catch a Tigers game. For tickets, call 248-25-TIGER or visit DetroitTigers.com and make Comerica Park your home away from home game.
Do you have dreams of diamonds and dolls? Well, dream no more. The big game's hottest star-studded celebrity party is coming. A party the likes of which Detroit has never seen. Diamonds and Dolls, Sunday, July 10th at 7, the nightclub in downtown Pontiac. Party all night long with super sexy co-hosts, including 2002 Maxim Covergirl and 1998 Playmate of the Year, Victoria Silvstedt. Baywatch Beauty and 2001 Playmate of the Year, Brandi Roderick. Playmate and Fox Sports reporter Lisa Durgan. And Playboy's 2004 Playmate of the Year, Carmela DeCesar. Performances by smoking hot DJ Playboy's 50th anniversary playmate Colleen Shannon. Also national artists of Flock of Seagulls.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. We're talking about the Downing Street memos. Everybody is talking about it. If you haven't heard about it, you ought to look into it before you make any decisions about the Bush decision to invade and occupy Iraq. I said earlier, there's no exit strategy because Bush does not intend to exit. The war was about controlling oil resources. It was about maintaining the world trading in euro dollars and not switching to, in petrodollars, in petrodollars, not petrol euros, and it's about military bases. It's about empire. It's something we can't afford. It will lead to war. It will be a disaster, and we see the disaster of it as it develops. Right now, a lot of us are watching the playoffs, the finals of the NBA, the National Basketball Association, Detroit 83 and San Antonio 82. There's a free throw just about to happen at 83-82. I can't even see it here. Is it 2 minutes left? And it is tied up. Wow. All right. We're going to play as soon as the game is over, which ought to be in about maybe 10 minutes or so. Dick is a killer. You can go to thepartyparty.com. Also, after midnight, we'll do our revisiting of the contest of the different versions of Imagine. But I said I didn't. I hope some people were listening. And Shelby, the webmaster of radiopower.org, said, just a note to let you know, NBA Radio Power has a stacked server. That means that just jillions of people are listening. Joe writes in to Call Talk Yes at Joe's from Westland. He writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. The head of the CIA said today that they know where Osama bin Laden is, but they prefer not to take him out at this time. Can you believe that? Asked Joe. He also went on to parrot what Dick Cheney said a couple of weeks ago, in that the Iraq insurgency is in its death throes. What's up with these guys? I just don't know. All right, let's go back to our phones, 313-298-WRIF, part of the Inkster Mafia. It's Darren. Darren, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, what's happening, man?
How you doing?
Pretty dang good. I want to say one thing, power to the people, and Inkster is in the house. I just want to say this is an absolutely fantastic game that's happening right now. What do you think about it?
Yeah, are you watching it and listening?
I'm watching it as I speak, and I'm listening to you, and this is such a thrill on a Sunday evening.
I don't know if I can stand this. 1 minute left. Detroit's up 87. Wait a minute. Oh, San Antonio's got 88? This is not good.
Man, this is like adrenaline to the max, man. I'm sitting here like, oh, wow, this is like hardcore.
All right, but go ahead. What's up? What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, I just want to say that, the last caller, the guy from Ontario.
Yeah.
I just want to say he's applying a lot of a rational thought about Americans in terms of, like, stating, okay, well, they should realize that the Bush administration. You just have a lot of people who simply, like you were saying before, Peter, buy into this whole process. You understand what I'm saying? And, it's like they refuse to accept what is currently happening now at this particular time. Like, he was saying he listens to, like, CNN and all that kind of stuff. I listen to CNN, Foxhole News, and all that kind of stuff, too. But I listen to it for the spin. You understand what I'm saying? I listen to it for the deceit and all that kind of stuff like that. So I think for the most part, people still, it's that last-ditch effort whereby it's like, oh, no, hold off, or, we're going to... No, it's not like that whatsoever. You know what I mean? As the casualties continue to escalate and mount,
mm-hmm.
These things will continue. You understand what I'm saying? And so I think it's a very admirable effort that John Conyers is attempting to do in terms of bringing about this commission, so to speak. You understand what I'm saying? Because I hope it goes through, and I hope it, you know, brings to light all the things that you're discussing at this particular time, because the issue that occurred with the 9/11 commission, you notice how they just kind of casually swept that under the rug in a sense that they didn't, you know, it brought to light a lot of different things, but it's like, okay, let's go back to cooking dinner. You know what I mean?
Well, I think, Darren, that there is a good possibility that many of us thinking that these Downing Street memo that finally exposed the lies behind the Bush invasion of Iraq is going to be the unraveling of the Bush administration. But, I mean, there just doesn't seem to be that will to push it any farther through the media. And there's two things that'll do it: either exposure through the media or a mass movement. And there is a movement, to be sure, out there, but it doesn't have the mass proportions that are really necessary to create the kind of base that where some of these politicians will get enough cojones to start what is proper an investigation into the allegations being made, with the possibility that we might have to be facing another impeachment. All right, Darren, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Here's Greg in Washington, Michigan. Welcome to the broadcast, Greg.
Hey, how's it going tonight?
Great.
Good. First of all, I want to say you need to expand your show to like 2-4 hours.
Okay.
It's a great show. I tell all my friends, I work at St. Joe Hospital, and I tell them about they're listening to.
Write my boss.
Oh, yeah, I will.
Yeah, you can write just Doug@WRIF.com. Although a lot of people write him all the time to get him off.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Keep you on longer.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention a few things. Let's see. First of all, we need to impeach Bush. We need to get rid of the Bush monarchy. They have us so worried about gas prices and losing our jobs that we're losing our country.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it's horrible. I ran for state rep about 5 years ago in this district. It's highly Republican. I didn't win, of course, but I encourage anybody to do it. It was the first time I ever did it. It was quite a learning experience. Very educational.
Yeah, most people...
I had 73 special interest groups contact me by mail.
Really?
Really.
Do they want to give you any money?
If I supported them, of course. But you would not believe some of the surveys they sent me. Some of them were 10, 12, 14 pages long.
Really?
Oh, it was just, I was like inundated. I'm going, oh, my God. I mean, I just had no idea. I was so naive.
Well, the only way politics is going to stop being a dirty business is if, again, it has as its core a mass movement. If it's left solely to individuals that have to depend on corporate financing, even oftentimes people with the best motivations have to make these compromises. Now, it's not so with somebody like John Conyers, who can really vote A, his conscience, and B, the will of his constituents, because when he gets reelected, he's reelected by like 85%. So he doesn't have to worry. I mean, like Dianne Feinstein, who's running for reelection, senator for California, she's real liberal. But she has signed on to this ridiculous flag desecration constitutional amendment. So she's fearful. She's fearful that if she says, look, this is absolutely outrageous, there's no need to have a constitutional amendment to protect the flag. The flag's not in danger. There's not like any problem that's being solved. And if we start getting into this deal where we start altering the Constitution every other day for single issues, it's going to be a real mess. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see what time it is. Okay, I think we can get another call in here. It's Al from Inkster. All Inkster people, call in, please. Hi, Al. Welcome to the show.
Who'd have thought Inkster was such a hotbed of radicalism?
I know. I got more Inksterites waiting as well. Go ahead.
Cool. We ought to get a club going.
Think about it.
I called to take you to task. You're talking about a mass movement. Maybe you should dedicate part of your show to announcing when various peace actions are taking place.
All right, here. How about this? Sit still for 1 minute. I forgot to mention this. In Rachel's name, rebuild Nasrallah's demolished home. Now, here's who is coming to tomorrow to our area. Cindy and Craig Corey. They're the parents of Rachel Corey. Rachel Corey was crushed to death by an Israeli Defense Force bulldozer that was destroying the home of the Nasrallahs. And so the family of the destroyed home, Samah and Khalid Nasrallah, whose home Israeli soldiers demolished while bulldozing Rachel to death, are going to be tomorrow, Monday, June 20th at 6 p.m. at St. Mary's Basilica Activities Center on Merriman Road in Livonia. There's a $20 donation. All proceeds will go towards rebuilding the Nasrallah's family home. Samah and Khalid Nasrallah and their infant daughter Sarma are part of the extended family that lived in the home that Rachel sought to protect. After Rachel was killed, despite the complete demolition of all the 2,200 surrounding homes in their neighborhood, the army just bulldozed down 2,200 homes. Think about that, people, if this was happening in your home, in Inkster, in Oak Park, in wherever you live. The family continued to live in their home for 7 months before it too was demolished. Khalid is an accountant who works for the Palestine Airlines. They fly out of Egypt. So this effort is, and you can go to my website and my calendar, Peter.
That's ironic.
Yeah, it's just terrible. You know, I actually wrote people and said I was going to go, but my wife and I decided I'm going to send them $40. But this is going to. This will actually make me too angry and too sad. I mean, I just know I'm going to sit at and think about this poor. This courageous,
crushed under a machine.
This courageous young woman who came from America to defend the homes of people and was crushed by this bulldozer with this the operator knowing full well that she was in its path. And I just don't feel in the emotional mood. I mean, that sounds kind of cavalier, but I'm just going to say.
Yeah, well, I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
My friend Kim's one of the organizers of that event. She just went on a peace action with the Michigan peace team to Palestine.
Wow. Well, that's good. Well,
you should mention all the, you know, women in black when they march, all the other, you know, isn't there still a Monday night vigil at 9 Mile in Woodward?
I think so. Well, people should go to my website, and they should hook on to a lot of the events, and also they should check out the other websites that list peace and freedom, peace and social justice activities.
United for Peace and Justice.
Yeah, that's another one. All right, thank you. I've got to do some spots. Right back.
This is WRIM.com. Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391.
Motor City Harley Davidson Harley Fest 2005, presented by 101 WRIF Molson and Jerome Duncan Ford. Your chance to nab a 2005 Harley Davidson Custom XL 883 Sportster.
Yeah.
Then park it in the driveway next to a sweet new Ford Harley Davidson F250 truck. And the glove box stuffed with $5,000 in gold, hard cash.
Compliments of rock.
Rock Financial.
Just keep your radio locked on 101 The Riff to win a key, along with tickets to see Tesla Friday, June 17th. Also, listen for details on Harley Bike Nights around the Motor City, where you can grab a key in person. Harley Fest 2005, presented by Motor City Harley Davidson.
Feel the freedom at the number one dealer, located in Farmington Hills.
Molson,
making friends since 1786.
Jerome Duncan Ford,
Michigan's number one Ford dealer.
Security provided by Gallagher Security. Trained professionals for crowd safety and management.
101 WRIF.
Riff rocks.
Do you have dreams of diamonds and dolls? Well, dream no more. The big game's hottest star-studded celebrity party is coming. A party the likes of which Detroit has never seen. Diamonds and Dolls, Sunday, July 10th at 7, the nightclub in downtown Pontiac. Party all night long with super sexy co-hosts, including 2002 Maxim Cover Girl and 1998 Playmate of the Year, Victoria Silvstedt.
Baywatch Beauty and 2001 Playmate of the Year, Brandi Roderick.
Playmate and Fox Sports reporter Lisa Durgan.
And Playboy's 2004 Playmate of the Year, Carmela DeCesar.
Performances by smoking hot DJ Playboy's 50th anniversary Playmate Colleen Shannon, also national artists of Flock of Seagulls and Naked Eyes. Your hosts will be none other than Mark and Mike from the Jewel and Mike Show, hanging around from 9 p.m. until they just can't take any more beautiful women. Get your tickets now. Call 866-666-6222 or go to diamondsanddolls.net. Sunday, July 10th at 7 in downtown Pontiac. Diamonds and Dolls.
The only all-star party to be at.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants. Like Clubhouse Tavern, located in the fabulous Fisher Building, offering great food at great prices. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price, but quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to WRIF.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings. Like Buddy's Pizza, come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at WRIF.com.
Like what you hear on the Riff? Then why not get your Riff Rock to go? Download all your favorite Riff tunes right now with the Riff Music Store online at WRIF.com.
Riff Rock. Rocks.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome to our second hour. In our third hour at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, going to be featuring an interview with Jonathan Schwartz. He is a consultant to AfterDowningStreet.org. AfterDowningStreet.org. And we'll be talking about those Downing Street memos. They are the ones that the memos that said that the Iraq intelligence was fixed around the policy. In other words, we were misled into the war in Iraq. We're now in this morass. We are closing in on 2,000 deaths, 12, 13,000 serious injuries, 30 to 100,000 Iraqis dead. So this is what we're going to hear at 1 a.m. And let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, I had this. This is from Stuart, it says, wrote into Call Talk Yes at yahoo.com. I see. He says, I'm an evangelical Christian that tends to vote conservative. I no longer believe in the Bush administration. I originally supported the war, and I now realize how stupid that was. Thanks for your work, Peter. By the way, I no longer buy the official 911 story. So everything's beginning to unravel here. And you can go to some of these conservative sites now, including conservative Christian sites, and they're saying, wait a minute, the ones that are really honest, the ones that are Christians first, and then are conservatives second, the ones that are conservatives first, that are right-wingers first, and then conservative, or rather Christianity is just kind of the smokescreen for their politics, well, they're going to back Bush when he's sent packing the way Richard Nixon was, right? Hey, by the way, let me see, last I looked was 89-89 tie, San Antonio and Detroit in the finals of the NBA for the championship, and it's in overtime right now. Oh, hey, Detroit's up 93-89 with about 2 minutes 51 seconds left. All right, wanted to play this for you. Wait a minute. I think I had another letter here real quickly. Maybe not. But I've been wanting to play this, and I've been kind of waiting till the game was over, and I don't think we're going to, who knows how long this game is going to go on. Hopefully just a couple minutes more. But this is a piece put together by thepartyparty.com, thepartyparty.com, and it's called Dick is a Killer. So you're listening to this on WRIF.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
Mr. Speaker, members of Congress, Mom and Dad, last month a girl in Lincoln, Rhode Island sent me a letter. It began, Dear George W. Bush, if there's anything you know, please send me a letter. P.S. Kiss my ass. Dick is a killer. It began the end of June in the Casablanca. Vice President Cheney, he showed the way. Terrified and innocent, the desire growing stronger, submitting to the whim of one brutal man. I feel free. I feel free. I feel free. I feel free. Dick is a killer. I feel free. Last August the 11th on the deck of the carrier in the Pacific, I gave to you my complete commitment, and it is right. I love you, and I do not want to lose you. My purposes are just and true. Activity is increasing, and Dick is on the rise. By executive order on the manhunt aboard the Starship Enterprise, the once all-powerful ruler of Iraq was found in a hole. The farmer felt the sorrow. Of the sorrow. I feel free. Farmers of the sorrow. And one reason is clear. Dick is a killer. 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 Dick. Kiss my ass. And I want you. It's difficult to talk about. Dick is a killer. 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 Kiss my ass. I believe that God made me a woman. I feel it in my heart, and this bitch's voice must be heard. A sex change is the only certain way to preserve the sanctity of marriage.
We are living in historic times. We are living in a time of great change, our leadership and resolve can light the way for others. And having come this far, and in the unfolding of the years, this country has a new friend called Shirley W. Bush. Dick is a killer. 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 May God continue to bless America. Word. I feel free. I feel free. I feel free. I feel free. Dick is a killer. I feel free.
Wow, that's a title cut from Dick is a Killer, put out by thepartyparty.com. And yeah, I'm wondering too, how the hell did he do this? Is that someone imitating him? Is that what he actually said? Is this just strung together phonemes, these little parts of speech? And I don't know. And actually, this is an expurgated version, a censored version. You can go to thepartyparty.com and download the full version with the words we do not want to put on the air. Anyways, we'll play that again next week. I think given the time, because I'm still kind of orienting this program around the playoffs with the Pistons and San Antonio. And let's see, right now it's 95-93 free throw by San Antonio. 95-90. Oh, did he miss it? I thought he did. Anyways, 95-93. Let's go back to your phones. Oh, man. You know what I did? Hold on here. I'm going to have to do a little... okay. We have to do a little... This is bad radio, folks. Sorry about this. But I actually even took it off the screen. All right. We're right back to it. Yeah, there it is. Okay. And going next, here's Maurice in Inkster, part of the Inkster Mafia, I'm beginning to call you guys. You all in the same house?
You over the house here. How you doing?
Okay, how you doing?
You know what our problem is?
What's that?
Our democratic system not working. If it was, we'd have proper checks and balances. You know what happened with Afghanistan and Iraq. I think the American government had a pipeline in Saddam Hussein for them to put out what they did put out in order for us to tackle.
Yeah.
And the whole Bush administration should be tried for treason and assassinated.
You don't mean that, right? You don't mean assassinated.
I mean they should be whatever you do for treason in this country, whatever it is, they should be killed. Whatever they do, because what they did was wrong.
But legally, you're saying?
Legally, yes.
Okay. All right.
But only one that I would say, I would have liked to have about 3 minutes of John Gruden with a rubber hose so I could beat the little monkey here faster than ass. You know, I just don't like Bush. Saying that, you still there, Peter?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Our government is not working. It seems like, I see where they're going. The China is an up and coming, going to be a second world of power. I think they're trying to get all the oil from the Pacific Rim and control it. What's going to happen is China and North Korea, maybe Japan, is going to unite. That's going to start a World War III.
Well, I sure hope that isn't the case. Let me see if I can find this one real quickly. Thank you, Maurice. Colin Powell just said that China is not a danger. Why can't I find all my stuff here? It's not a danger to the United States. So why are we spending half a trillion dollars a year on our so-called defense? All right. Thank you very much. Let's go. I think Jay is just watching the game. We'll go to Bob in Detroit. Bob, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hey, Bob. You with me? Let me see. I don't think I got that. All right. Bob.
Good evening. I'd like to touch on a number of things here, but first I'd like to mention that I hope people will support Dick Durbin. And we're not talking about the Dick who was in that song here.
No.
We're talking about Dick Durbin, who had the guts to call it like it is, and they're trying to pillory him. As far as I know, he still hasn't recanted, but I just heard a replay with that Russert idiot, with McCain on there saying how if he doesn't back, if he doesn't apologize, the Republican Nazis are going to take action against him. What are they going to do, impeach him? I mean, I guess it's possible.
Well, Bob, let's acquaint people with what Dick Durbin said, and I don't have the quote in front of me, but essentially he said if you started reading without knowing who was involved here, the kind of circumstances that have gone down at Abu Ghraib and at Guantanamo and at that, what is it, Begram prison in Afghanistan, you might think this was involving, what did he say, Nazis?
That's correct, Peter. And it's worse than that. Remember, we've got floating prisons and other unnamed prisons all over the world, and you can expect the same kind of stuff is being done to them everywhere. So, yeah, sure, he had the guts to say it like it is, and people call, support him, send letters, faxes, however you can support him, because otherwise they're going to make an example of this guy and tear him to shreds.
Well, I think even more so, Bob, what's in, at stake here is an attempt by the Republicans to divert our attention again from the real issues at hand. Whether or not Dick Durbin was involved in hyperbole or inappropriate language, or whether he was descriptively correct, what we want to talk about is policy. Whether or not policy actually is involved here, that conjures up these horrible images that mostly we think aren't appropriate for the United States.
Okay, can I go on to another topic?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you've already introduced him. I want to go back to the hearings that Conyers had. And what made me very sad was to see that the remarks by, among others, Ray McGovern, I believe he's ex-CIA or ex-FBI.
CIA, yeah.
He testified
at the Conyers hearing.
The machine running, and I'm sorry to say that Howard Dean and Mr. Conyers himself were right in there censoring away, apologizing, for his remarks, saying they defend Israel. Can you get this? You just talked about Rachel Corrie and what was done to her, and what was done to her has been going on for decades now. The brutal treatment by Israel of the Palestinians, who are the true indigenous people of that region of Palestine. And have you ever heard Conyers talk about Rachel Corrie? Have you ever heard Dean talk about Rachel Corrie? No, but they're there supporting Israel. What does that tell you? There's a real problem. And I'm unhappy about the Conyers hearings because they don't also focus on Afghanistan. Because what we're doing in Afghanistan is as ugly and unjustified as what is going on in Iraq. But to deal with Afghanistan, you've got to go to 9/11. And there you're going to find that, of course, 9/11 being an inside job, was a complete inside job, and therefore no outsiders had any operation going on there, and that includes bin Laden, who is probably dead. I note that the Israelis, Israeli sources actually indicate bin Laden died a number of years ago, but he's a shibboleth. They bring him out, and they can say OBL, and everybody goes bananas. If anything, OBL and the rest of them were working for us anyways. Al-Qaeda was a creation of the CIA. The Mossad was involved, too.
So, well, before we're getting an enormous amount of information here, let me go back to the Senator Durbin remarks. Or, I'm sorry, to the, remind me again, the ex-CIA guy's name, McGovern.
Ray McGovern,
right. So McGovern was being accused of anti-Semitism because he said that all of this was to being done to create U.S. and Israeli domination in the Middle East. And for that, he was accused of being anti-Semitic. I don't understand that. I mean, why is criticism of the government of Israel using the same criticism that the left in Israel uses of its own government? Why is that considered anti-Semitic? If you go, for instance, to, let me see, what, this website is way too long, but Professor Jeff Helper in Israel has a group called the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. So he's absolutely opposed to the same kind of activity. He and his group and has a lot of support among the Israelis against this massive destruction of Palestinian homes by the Israeli army. That doesn't make him anti-Semitic. Criticizing a government if you start saying Jews are trying to control the world or nonsense like that, well, yeah, maybe then someone if they say that they are guilty of anti-Semitism. But nothing that was said by Ray McGovern qualifies for that. All right, Bob, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here is Jeff in West Bloomfield. Jeff, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks.
Good. Peter, I'm glad that I finally got a chance to talk with you. I believe there's three sides to every story. And having heard, regarding the Jeff Schwartz or whatever his name was that's against the demolition of the Gaza homes, I would agree with that, okay? Let me also tell you that, being born in the United States, after college, I volunteered for the Israeli military for the paramedic unit, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I will tell you that as far as anti-Semitism goes, I agree with your statement on that. You're criticizing the government. I don't think that their support for that or their spin on that was legit. But I'll tell you two things. Israel is not trying to take over the world. It's smaller than the size of New Jersey. And the most important thing I could tell you is that the Israelis, the Jews are not out to get anybody. I don't understand the hatred and the one-sided views from your show, because one thing I remember is in 1981, the same person who now doesn't have chemical weapons, he's the same person who built a nuclear factory with the potential to build missiles. Six F-16 jets went over three countries, destroyed the plant, and came back unharmed. Do you really think that Iran is not going to go in the same direction?
Well, you got to remember, Israel has atomic weapons and has, uncertain terms, said that they are willing to use them. And most countries want nuclear weapons, not for aggressive purposes, but in many ways with Israel the same way, as a defensive. Of course, I mean, they always lead to bad. They haven't. I shouldn't say they always do, because they've only been used once, but they have such an incredible potential to be used in a manner that turns out to be incredibly destructive. Israel wanted the atomic bomb because it is so isolated, because initially it began as a European white settler colonial nation, that it had to take land, just as the United States took land from native people, just like the Australians did, just like the South Africans did. It was the same process. I mean, whatever, the historic lands and all that. There were people living there. They all got shoved out. They lost their homes. I don't want to go into 100 arguments again about going way back. But the Arabs dislike, or in many cases hate, and even slander the Jewish people besides the state of Israel because of what occurred there. And I don't think, certainly these Arab nations have used the presence of Israel as a way to deal with their own populations, not face their own corrupt and dictatorial practices, and on and, and on and on. But Israel today still refuses the United Nations, in the same way that Saddam Hussein was called upon to get out of Kuwait. Israel has been called upon any number of times to completely exit the West Bank. You cannot annex territory won in war. And that, in that regard, there is no justification whatsoever for any settlement at all in the West Bank, period. But wait a minute, let me get the atomic weapons. Countries want the atomic weapons because they're fearful of assault. Iran wants them. I don't know whether they're actually making them or not. They claim they're not. Some people say they are. But they know if you don't have proper weaponry, the United States will invade you. If you do have it, like North Korea, you're safe.
Peter, I agree with most of the things you said, okay? But I'll tell you two things. For the past 3 weeks, homemade missiles have been fired, and no Israeli, okay, has done anything. We've held back with restraint, okay, because we're trying to follow...
Wait, who's the we here? Aren't you an American citizen?
Yeah, I'm an American and I'm a Jew.
Okay. Well, it's not a we then. It's a they.
Well, that's your opinion. I feel very strongly that, you know what, in 9/11, when they dropped out of the World Trade Center, do you know who the people are that are creating the parachutes? Do you know who the people are that are trying to do everything to train U.S. soldiers for urban, you know, anti-terrorism, to make sure that women and children do not get assaulted? Do you know how many lives we have lost as Americans and Israelis trying to make sure that Iraqi civilians, Lebanese civilians, whoever, does not get killed?
Well, I don't know. Look, Israel has killed probably 4 and 5 times more than they've suffered. And it's because of this insistence to conquer territory, to conquer and occupy territory. They're hated as occupiers. They're in Palestinian, they're on Palestinian land now. And you can say, well, you know, we're on Ottawa and Potawatomi land now. And, you know, at some point they're not going to get it back. And probably one can assume that the Palestinians are not going to get the Israeli land. But the West Bank is an occupied territory. And as long as Israel continues to try to occupy it and cut it up in little pieces and give this amount of it and that amount of it, well, this is all going to continue. And it turns Israel into rather than a nation of victims, turns them into what occupiers always are. They have to act in a beastly manner. They have to kill civilians. They have to rocket cities. They have to create huge walls and destroy thousands and thousands of homes. And all it has to be done is, like so many Israelis agree, Israel get out of the West Bank, period.
For the Israelis?
What?
You can't say that. Because I can tell you that the West Bank, is the only reason we're even there is because we have to protect ourselves.
Well, you know what? Who is this we and ourselves? You know, you're an American.
Right. That's right. And I believe that absolutely the politics and the way that the Palestinians are choosing to get what they want is through violence. And that is the definition of...
Well, that's how Israel gained its state. That's how Israel gained its state. The United Nations created a partition of historic Palestine into a Palestinian state and an Israeli state. And if you go back and look at recent what they call Israeli revisionist history, you understand that the Israeli leadership, the Jewish leadership, intended to use this war in order to push the Palestinians out of the land that they were granted by the United States. And when you talk about terrorism, all you got to do is look at the Irgun, the Stern Gang, that were dynamiting hotels, blowing up stuff, involved themselves in all sorts of terrorism, the identical acts that the Israelis condemned the Palestinians for. What's that? Wait, what are you saying?
Do you understand who the United States goes to make sure that they treat people with sensitivity when it comes to terrorism, to make sure that the United States citizens were safe?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Israelis are guilty of torturing Palestinians in their prisons. They've been condemned by Amnesty International. They've been condemned by the United States. I'm sorry, by the United Nations. And now we see the United States carrying out the similar kind of tactics as it occupies another Arab country. All right. I can't go on with this forever, but I appreciate it. I appreciate your remarks. All right, here is Dave in Dearborn. Dave, it's Peter Werby. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Pete. I want to change the subject for just a minute and talk about GM.
Yeah, could I just mention one thing, by the way? The Pistons just lost in overtime by 1 point.
Man.
Yeah.
I guess my wife owes me money.
Yeah, okay.
But last week or the week before, you had a woman who called, and I think she was a wife of a union member. And I've been members of unions. And she said that, you know, all people have to do is buy American. I've owned, you know, American cars since I've been driving, mostly GMs. Last year I went out and bought my first foreign car. I bought a Kia. Before that, I went to a Chevy dealership and I looked at a 4-cylinder, 4-door Cavalier. That's all I wanted. Little, you know, 4-cylinder, 4-door Cavalier. The cheapest one on the lot was $23,000.
What?
There's no way I'm paying $23,000 for a 4-cylinder, 4-door. I went to a Kia dealership and bought a brand new Spectra, 4-cylinder, 4-door, with the same options that the Cavalier had, 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty, and I paid $10,000 for it.
$10,000.
Yeah. And, you know, GM says, you know, we can't compete. If they didn't have so much, you know, legacy cost tacked onto their vehicles, they could compete.
Well, they probably should have gone to another dealer. I mean, I got a top-of-the-line Taurus with every bell and whistle on it, you know, the big one, for $17,500.
Mm-hmm. So for another $3,000, I could have bought a full-size Bonneville, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And what, you know, people are talking about, you know, impeach Bush. I honestly believe that we are a country of sheep. People do what they're told. Most people don't have the initiative because they're comfortable with their own lives and where they are. For the most part, they think, you know, why upset the status quo? Yeah, Bush lied. Yeah, Bush took us into war. But my life's good, so why should I care?
So you think this is not going to move too far? Well, I think the main concern of the Republicans now, of course, is to maintain power. They're trying to appoint all these far right wing judges. They control both houses of Congress, and they're really worried now about the 2006 elections, because although Bush's ratings are in the toilet, the Congress is even worse, and the Congress is dominated by Republicans now. So if I think if the like elections were held tomorrow, there'd probably be a Democratic sweep of both houses. So what does that mean? What's going to happen between now and November of 2006? I mean, hopefully, or Bush is thinking, hopefully this will all blow over. But if things just keep getting worse, what's he going to do? Well, he'll probably invent another crisis. I don't know what he can do. He can't invade Iran. He can't invade North Korea. I mean, North Korea has nuclear weapons, so we're not going to invade them. He's not going to invade Iran because Iran, unlike Iraq, has a real army. Iraq had an army of dust. We're fighting guys that brag about fighting barefoot. And Iran has a huge army, well-equipped. And so I don't know. I don't know what Bush and these characters in his administration are going to attempt to pull out.
Well, there's talk about Jeb Bush running in 2008 for president, and if that happens, you know, the agenda is going to continue.
Well, I don't know. I think hopefully by then people will be sick to death of the Bush family and send them back to Crawford and Kennebunkport. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thanks for being with us. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Ken from Fraser. Appreciate you calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Good show tonight.
Thank you.
On the John Lennon song?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm not going to get to those tonight.
Oh.
I don't know. Or do you think I should?
Well, maybe could end it before the interviews.
Yeah.
But I would take the original any day. But I do like the other one, too. Is it by Tool?
The other, well, it's by Maynard from Tool in the band Perfect Circle.
Oh, yeah. That's right, Perfect Circle. Yeah, I do like that one, but I would still rather have the John Lennon version. But last year I called you when Reagan had passed away, and I told you about the John Lennon and the FBI Files book.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever get to read that? Or
that's by, what's the man's name, John?
No, it's by Phil Strongman.
Oh, no.
And Alan Parker, and it really ties in the Bush and Reagan with John Lennon and why, you know, but anyhow, just brought that up. But I wanted to bring up something else. I'm really glad this Downing report is starting to gain momentum. But a blogger called in on Tom Hartman this week, and he was talking about some conspiracy stuff with the 9/11.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of us have been reading those things, but you got to, you know, take it with a grain of salt. And but he started putting out some information I'd never heard, and, you know, Tom kept saying to him, but I just don't get the motive. I don't get the motive. So this guy said some things about asbestos in the building and all this kind of stuff. So I started searching around, and then, like, 2 days later, Tom finds United Press International released in the Washington Times about this Morgan Reynolds.
Okay.
Did you read about this?
No.
Well, this guy was in the first administration of George Bush now that we have.
Oh, yeah, I did see something about that. Go ahead.
And he is saying that the collapse of the towers is bogus.
That it was impossible for it to collapse because of the collision and there must have been explosives inside.
Well, we all know that there's no way the third building, Tower 7, could have fallen from the little damage that it shouldn't have fell at all. But it did, and when you look into it, I don't want to go into it all tonight, but, I mean, I just think your listeners should look into this Morgan Reynolds. I work at a paper, and our editor and I, we started talking about this thinking, what the heck is this?
Well, I think one of the things you can do, if you go to my website, gee, I don't know, actually, I don't think I have my 911 link up there anymore.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, I mean, you got to, I have the page, but I don't think I have a link to it. What have I done? All right, go ahead. Sorry.
But I just, him and I are pretty skeptical about things, but we looked up this Morgan Reynolds, and this guy is for real.
Yeah, no, he is.
And he's kind of, and we couldn't figure, we thought, why this week? Why is he blabbing this week? And we just wondered if it had to do with the Downing report coming out and that picking up momentum.
Well, it's hard to say, but I will, I'll put my 911 link back on there because there's all sorts of charges, and I've never been able to sort through them enough to come to a conclusion about them all. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. We got to go to spots and right back. Maybe, all right, we'll do the Imagine face-off again. So we have Maynard from Tool band Perfect Circle, John Lennon, and we have a third entrant. I think you'll find that very interesting. Right back.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hey, Tigers fans, this summer, why sit at home when you could sit at home? Wait, that is. Now is a great time to catch all the fun and excitement happening at every Detroit Tigers home game. You'll see plenty of homers by Pudge Rodriguez, Dimitri Young, Carlos Guillen, and all your favorite players. But a trip to Comerica Park means more than just baseball. While the Tigers are driving home runs, you could drive home in a brand new car during the Chevy Cobalt Drive One Home Giveaway, sponsored by your Detroit area Chevy dealers. Just buy a ticket to select Friday or Saturday night home games, and you could drive one out of here. Looking for a surefire hit? Hey, don't miss Friday and Saturday night fireworks, sponsored by Pepsi and Verizon Wireless. And with a weekend value pack, that's four tickets, four hot dogs, and four Pepsis for just $59. And you'll want to bring everyone from home. So for great giveaways like autographed balls, bobbleheads, collector cards, and jerseys, and for great baseball, this summer, catch a Tigers game. For tickets, call 248-25-TIGER or visit DetroitTigers.com and make Comerica Park your home away from home game.
Anglers, get ready to cast your line for big money. The OSI Pro Series WRAF Great Lakes Fishing Championship Series is underway, and there's still time to enter to win the $1,500 Series Championship. Sign up now for the Fast Championship going out of Lake Erie Metro Park on July 30th. Slots will fill up fast, so get your entry in now. Compete for thousands of dollars in cash and prizes, including the DMF Bait Award for the kid under 16 landing the largest fish on live bait. It's all going to be given away to the best fishing team in town, so sign up now by calling 248-591-6841 or go to WRIF.com for an entry form. There will be fun for everyone at the post-event party at Big Al Sports Grill, so call 248-591-6841 to become the OSI Pro Series WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today. Brought to you by OSI Pro Series, the DMF Bait Company, Big Al Sports Grill, and 101 WRIF.
Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391.
Detroit's Rock Station 101 WRIF and WRIF.com bring you the hottest deals in the Motor City. At WRIF.com, you are only one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price. Dine online and eat for less. Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's best restaurants, like Walker's Speakeasy, the West Side's hottest destination for great food, drinks, and daily entertainment, located on Beach Daily in Dearborn Heights. Log on to www.wrif.com. You can purchase full full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price. But quantities are limited, so you better act fast. For more details, log on to WRIF.com and be sure to check out even more special offers and savings. Like Buddy's Pizza, come into any of Buddy's 9 locations today. Enjoy one of the nation's best pizza places as recognized by the Food Network. Buddy's, Detroit's number one pizza since 1946. Log on today and save at WRIF.com.
Do you have dreams of diamonds and dolls? Well, dream no more. The big game's hottest star-studded celebrity party is coming. A party the likes of which Detroit has never seen. Diamonds and Dolls, Sunday, July 10th at 7, the nightclub in downtown Pontiac. Party all night long with super sexy co-hosts, including 2002 Maxim Cover Girl and 1998 Playmate of the Year, Victoria Silvstedt.
Baywatch Beauty and 2001 Playmate of the Year, Brandi Roderick.
Playmate and Fox Sports reporter Lisa Durgan.
And Playboy's 2004 Playmate of the Year, Carmela DeCesar.
Performances by smoking hot DJ Playboy's 50th anniversary Playmate Colleen Shannon, also national artists of Flock of Seagulls and Naked Eyes. Your hosts will be none other than Mark and Mike from the Drew and Mike Show, hanging around from 9 p.m. until they just can't take any more beautiful women. Get your tickets now. Call 866-666-6222 or go to diamondsanddolls.net. Sunday, July 10th at 7 in downtown Pontiac. Diamonds and Dolls.
The only all-star party to be at.
This is WRIF.com.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome to our final segment. I'll be broadcasting live, taking your calls, 313-298-WRIF, up until 1 a.m. Eastern Time. And then we're going to interview Jonathan Schwartz, who's a consultant to AfterDowningStreet.org, the memos that have finally exposed the lies of the Bush administration. That'll be at 1 a.m. And here, somebody sent me this. Please join us for Meditation in the Park, Tuesday, June 21st. That's coming right up, 7 p.m. at Royal Oaks Meininger Park. That's on Maxwell, right just north of 11 Mile Road. If you know where the Oakland County YMCA is, right there on 11 Mile. It's right up there. We will join people across the USA and Australia, Sweden, Iraq, Denmark, Canada, Germany, Slovenia, New Zealand, lots of other countries, Israel, Turkey, Croatia, and other countries around the world to create a worldwide wave of peace, love, and global healing. Like, wow. Guided meditation, Native American musicians, and they ask that you park at Don Darrow High School and then kind of walk through. So, if you want to do that, I hate to say it, but I'm going to go play handball at that time. All right. You may remember, if you're a regular listener of this broadcast, that we had kind of a head-to-head between the traditional John Lennon version of Imagine. How many times have we heard this? With the most incredible radical lyrics, right? This is one of these outtakes.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Okay, that's John Lennon. And then Maynard from Tool with his band Perfect Circle, kind of a, people described it as sort of a dirge. Hello, do it for me. Oh, wait, this is... No, that's not it. Hold on.
Production for the benefit of the nation or its...
Okay, we got to have a little change here. Let's see. We'll get it. Hold on here. Hold on. Stay with me, folks. Stay with me. Okay, here's the Tool version. That's the Perfect Circle version. In fact, I think probably that's John Lennon.
I hope someday you'll join us.
fits right into this meditation in the park thing. It isn't hard to do. Yeah, so imagine a different world. I mean, I said last time we did this, why in the world with this song, except maybe it does speak to the longing all of us have for another world where we don't live on a planet that's being ecologically destroyed, where tens of millions of people starve to death, where there's 45 million people inflicted with AIDS, where there's billions of people living in poverty that don't have to. All right, so those were the two. And it generally broke down people, say, over 35, like John Lennon, people younger, like the Perfect Circle version. But we have another entrant. All right, let's hear it from him.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. The Color Girl City. Take a walk on the wild side. One, two, three, four. Imagine yourself countries. It isn't hard to do that. Nothing to kill or die for. No religion to. Imagine all the people living life in peace. The Color Girl City. Take a walk on the wild side. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. The Color Girl City. Take a walk on the wild side.
All right, so there we have the contestants. We began with John Lennon, went to Perfect Circle, and sounds a lot like George W. Bush, put together by thepartyparty.com, thepartyparty.com. So even if you didn't call up to kind of join in what this is all about, let me know what you think. Which version do you like the best? Here's Seth in Livonia. Seth, it's Peter Werby. Welcome to the show.
Hey, I was just wondering if you served overseas.
Did I serve overseas? No, yeah. I've never been in the military. Why?
I just don't respect what you're talking about at all. I mean, you don't know what's going on over there if you've never served.
Well, wait a minute. You know, I'll tell you, during the Civil Rights era, the Southerners used to say to people, if you don't live in the South, you don't know what's going on. How in the world, I mean, you think that people that have not been in the military or have not been in Iraq don't have the right to speak their opinion?
Well, if all these people feel that we shouldn't be over there, why did so many people vote for Bush?
Well, so many people didn't. First off, he got about 50.8% of the election, of the popular vote, and I believe that he stole two elections in a row, and that the vote was suppressed in Ohio, and that the voting machines that were involved in that state and several others were rigged to give Republican
and
votes.
There was a conspiracy.
Well, yeah, you know, there are conspiracies, you know.
There's so much wrong with the USA, how come you live here?
Wait. You think if I think there's something wrong with this country, that I ought to move out of it?
No.
You didn't answer my question. You think rather than being a good citizen and trying to correct what I see as wrong, that I somehow ought to move out of here?
Well, no, no. I just don't feel that you're talking about it correctly. I mean, you're publicly saying that Bush is wrong.
Well,
that
yeah.
Everything that we're doing over there is wrong.
Right.
But you've never been over there. I mean, there is people dying for us over there. My brother is serving on the front lines.
Well, I don't think that he is serving for us. He is serving for a lie and a mistake by George W. Bush. And all of us wish that your brother and everyone else comes back without the kind of terrible wounds that over 12,000 men and women have suffered, that he certainly doesn't die in the manner that over 1,700 people have. But how you can explain to me why something is being done for us rather as opposed to against our interests?
We want the war over here.
Well, that's what George Bush just said. How in the world would the war come over here?
Because 9/11. 9/11 was the beginning of the war over here.
There's no war. What we had were these criminal right-wing religious zealots that took upon themselves to launch a one-time attack. Not to say that they probably couldn't do something horrendous again, given all the weaponry that's around. But that's not a war. That's police work. That's what that hopefully they've been now, after they blew it so badly on 9/11, is the government has been up to speed and stopping people from carrying out these terrorist activities. But 9/11 has nothing to do with Iraq. Iraq is about oil. Iraq is about petrodollars. Iraq is about domination of that region through imperial means to benefit the oil companies, the other wealthy people that run this show. You ever think about that?
Well, yeah, but I mean, and that has that's the business aspect of it. I mean, we have also the freedom, the people that actually hurt us over here. There's a whole bunch of other things tied into it. It's not just that. I mean, and then everybody's saying that Bush brought it on us. Well, no, all these people that hurt us were in the forces, were in our country before Bush was even president. They were in all the services, and we actually employed them before Bush was even in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Bush's fault. None of this is Bush's
fault. Well, it's all Bush's fault because he was president during September 11th. Condoleezza Rice and, well, I forget Condoleezza Rice. George W. Bush essentially ignored every warning about September 11th, including a memo that he got in June, which said Osama bin Laden to strike in the United States. In August, Bush goes off for a month's vacation. His director of National Security kept saying, we have to make some plans for what's going on in these people that are directing their efforts against us, their terrorist efforts. Bush did nothing. Bush should have been impeached for allowing September 11th.
Well, he didn't allow September 11th. I mean,
somebody did. You know, hey, I'll tell you, man, when mistakes go on in almost any other enterprise in the world and they happen during your watch, you're out of there.
It wasn't just one person that allowed September 11th. It was a bunch of people's mistakes.
Well, it was. It was a pretty bad mistake. So then Bush thought that he would compound it. Rather than going after Osama bin Laden, which they still can't find, it's Osama bin Forgotten, the United States decides it's going to overthrow the Taliban, allowing Osama bin Laden to escape, and instead we're involved in another war in Afghanistan where thousands of people are losing their lives, hundreds of Americans, I can't remember what it's up to, at least a couple hundred Americans have lost their lives there, and it's not getting any better. Then he decides that they're going to invade Iraq. For what reasons? Well, they have weapons of mass destruction. We find out, of course, subsequently, that there's a total, at best, mistake, another mistake. This administration makes a lot of mistakes, doesn't it?
See, all these people that say that it was a mistake that we invaded, you know, we don't actually know that if what they had and what they didn't, you know?
Well, wait a minute. How come I knew there were no weapons of mass destruction? Because it was pretty easy. You knew that the evidence that was being presented on the face of it was a bunch of BS. And you had to look a little bit beyond what was being presented. And you had to be real suspicious of these folks to begin with. Also, at the end, when the inspections were actually taking place, they found nothing. So Bush says, well, we got to attack right now because they're such a danger. Well, the opposite was true. There was no danger, and there were no weapons, and Bush invaded quickly rather than waiting the month that was that some people were advocating to let the inspectors finish their deal. Look, you should go to some of these websites that are filled with families with people over there. They're saying, bring our sons home now. There's all sorts of military, well, I forgot what it is, military families for common sense, bringthetroopshomenow.com. You go to my website, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E, and go to the Resistance Against the War, and you'll see how many families are just worried sick that their kids have been sent over to take part in something that they're sure is going to end badly. All right, thank you. Okay, I shouldn't even get that upset. I mean, you know, in fact, I was way too upset with him. I mean, when someone says, you know, you weren't over there and all that, but can you imagine the concern that that young man had for his brother? The fear of the potential of what's you know, lies in store, and the uncertainty that's beginning to creep in. To at best uncertainty that's beginning to creep into the minds of even people that supported the war because of what we've learned recently. But that's just a bunch of BS about you haven't been over there. In fact, sometimes it's a matter of not being able to see the forest for the trees, that you're too close up there. Usually when everything I've read, I've never been in a war, but generally a war gets real personal. You want to stay alive, you want to keep your buddies alive. The enemy is about 50 feet from you. What's happening 100 feet or 100 yards or 10 miles or 100 miles across a battlefield, that there's not much you know about that or can do about it. Here's Kim from Dearborn Heights. Kim, hi, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for waiting.
Good. No problem. And I vote for the John Lennon version, showing my age.
Okay.
But I really can't let Jeff's earlier comments go by unchecked. I just got back from the West Bank, and his comments are just ludicrous. I would invite him to stay in the village Belain, which is in the Ramallah district, where we were for quite a while working with people who are demonstrating nonviolently against this wall that is taking 50% of their agricultural land. I can show Jeff the shells that were shot at us. The sound grenades, the tear gas for nonviolent demonstration, that is every single day, Jeff, in the West Bank. I would invite you to go through checkpoints. I'd invite you to come and stay in the caves where I lived in the Hebron Hills for a while and see shepherds who are being every single day harassed by settlers with Uzis over their shoulders, wearing Halloween masks, threatening, beating them up. I mean, this is the reality of the West Bank. It is the occupation that is the violence. That is the violence that is provoking any other kind of violence response. And I couldn't let those comments go by unpassed.
Well, I assume also that you are going to be at this event tomorrow night. Can you remind us about that?
Yeah, it's at St. Mary's in Livonia, and the parents of Rachel Corey will be there, as will the family from Rafa. We invite people to come. It starts at 6 o'clock and $20 donation, and we'll be passing the hat. The idea is to rebuild the home. We're Rebuilding Homes Alliance, and invite everyone to come to that. There are tickets available at the door.
Kim, I should remind people that Rachel Corey was crushed to death by an Israeli Defense Force bulldozer. She was trying to stop this home from being demolished.
Rafa,
and I didn't realize that that was part of a series of 2,200 homes that were destroyed by the Israelis.
We will have, I'm with Michigan Peace Team, and we have had and do have teams in Gaza, and we'll have plenty of photos available tomorrow night that will show, I mean, the devastation that goes on there. Gaza is awful. And this whole, you know, we really have got to be honest when we look at this, because there's no peace. There is no peace that will ever come unless we address the gross injustice of this occupation. You were right on, Peter. Your analysis was very good, and I thank you for that. We need, you know, there's such a disjoint in the media here. And I invite people to check out Allison Weir's page, If Americans Knew. She's done good analysis, you know, objective factual analysis.
Oh, yeah, I have that on my site on the front page, as a matter of fact. I think it's a...
Great.
What's the site name again?
ifamericansknew.
.com or org, yeah.
Yeah, one or the other. But yeah. She's done some good media analysis, and we're really not getting the news here. And I applaud Ray McGovern. I know Ray McGovern. He's a good guy. We cannot allow this charge of anti-Semitism. It's untrue. It's false. And I would invite people like Jeff to look at the Israeli anarchists, especially whom we were working with. These kids are wonderful, and they are Israelis, and they see that this occupation is just, it's got to come to an end.
Kim, let me ask you something. I want your real honest opinion on this. I wrote to my, I have this event on my website calendar, and I sent out to my entire list saying that I thought everyone ought to attend this event and see the parents of this child that was murdered by the Israeli army, and that they ought to see the family whose house was destroyed on the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Gaza. Yeah.
Oh, it was in Gaza, right.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I'm not going to go. I'm going to send $40. But I said earlier, I don't know if you heard me, that I'm going to get too angry and too sad. What do you think about my decision? And you can say anything you want about me.
Oh, Peter, I support it completely. I'll be honest, the grief that one feels seeing what's going on over there, I support your decision completely. And quite frankly, if I weren't going to be in the kitchen tomorrow, I would probably consider doing the same. The Corys are wonderful. I'm sorry that you're going to miss hearing them speak, but they're out speaking a lot, and I'm sure someone will be videotaping tomorrow night. But no, I support that completely.
Well,
I vacillate between rage and despair and profound grief.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be this way.
You're right. It does not have to be this. But nothing that actually across the world. That's why I have on my website that wonderful slogan from the anti-globalization movement, Another World is Possible. I interviewed the Corey family, the husband and the wife, the mother and father of the murdered daughter, just mm-hmm. not too long after it had occurred. And I could barely, I mean, they were, I was closer to tears than they were. I mean, they'd already, talked about it any number of times. But I don't know, somehow just talking to you again makes me reconsider. But, Kim, I actually have to end this segment of the show.
Okay, well, thank you, Peter.
All right, thank you so much. And maybe why don't you email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and maybe we could have some of your people on my interview segment.
Love to do that.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Kim. All right. If you want information about this event, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com. And this will, if you go to the Detroit calendar, it'll give you all the information. All right. Stay tuned. Jonathan Schwartz on the Downing Street Memo.
This is WRIF.com.
Over to the Harley Davidson Harley Fest 2005. Presented by 101 WRIF, Molson, and Jerome Duncan Ford. Your chance to nab a 2005 Harley Davidson Custom XL 883 Sportster.
Yeah.
Then, park it in the driveway next to a sweet new Ford Harley Davidson F250 truck. And a glove box stuffed with $5,000 in gold, hard cash.
Compliments of Rock Financial.
Just keep your radio locked on 101 The Riff to win a key. Along with tickets to see Tesla Friday, June 17th. Also, listen for details on Harley Bike Nights around the Motor City, where you can grab a key in person. Harley Fest 2005, presented by Motor City Harley Davidson.
Feel the freedom at the number one dealer, located in Farmington Hills.
Molson,
making friends since 1786.
Jerome Duncan Ford,
Michigan's number one Ford dealer.
Security provided by Gallagher Security. Trained professionals for crowd safety and management.
101 WRIF. Riff Rock.
Bill Bonds with a commercial. If you're near or farsighted and you want to throw away those glasses forever, I know a doctor you should see. Dr. Escombati. Phone number 1-877. Then the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E. 1-877. You see more. The equipment, the finest high-tech equipment ever made. Price $999 per eye. So don't fall for those $200 prices you hear being tossed around on the radio. Cows don't fly. Neither do those prices, unless your daddy is an eye doctor and you're getting a freebie. Dr. S. Combati, no doctor we know of has a better success rate. Procedure is fast, safe, cost $999 per eye. Virtually painless, you're in and out, maybe 40 minutes. Procedure itself, maybe 5. When it's over, you'll want to kiss your glasses goodbye and hug the doctor. Or maybe you
guys will just want to give them a hi-fi, shake hands with them, walk away, and see a whole new world. See ya.
Every day, employers search for people skilled in today's technology. Are you ready for a change to a new career? Make a difference for yourself by calling the ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-396-6622. Find out how an ITT tech can help you prepare for a career in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT tech. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Now is your chance to make a difference for yourself, to start a new path to a career involving technology. Find out what an ITT Tech education can offer you. Call 1-800-396-6622 for an ITT Tech brochure. Classes are forming now, so call ITT Tech at 1-800-396-6622. That's 1-800-396-6622.
Do you have dreams of diamonds and dolls? Well, dream no more. The big game's hottest star-studded celebrity party is coming, a party the likes of which Detroit has never seen. Diamonds and Dolls, Sunday, July 10th at 7, the nightclub in downtown Pontiac.
Party all night long with super sexy co-hosts, including 2002 Maxim Cover Girl and 1998 Playmate of the Year, Victoria Silvstedt.
Baywatch Beauty and 2001 Playmate of the Year, Brandi Roderick.
Playmate and Fox Sports reporter Lisa Durgan.
And Playboy's 2004 Playmate of the Year, Carmela DeCesar.
Performances by smoking hot DJ, Playboy's 50th anniversary Playmate, Colleen Shannon. Also, national artists of Flock of Seagulls. And Naked Eyes. Your hosts will be none other than Mark and Mike from the Drew and Mike Show, hanging around from 9 p.m. until they just can't take any more beautiful women. Get your tickets now. Call 866-666-6222 or go to diamondsanddolls.net. Sunday, July 10th at 7 in downtown Pontiac. Diamonds and Dolls.
The only all-star party to be at.
Riff rocks the road. Every week, check out WRIF.com for information on upcoming Riff events. Sponsored by Wireless Toys. Announcing no more activation fees. Get reimbursed for the activation fee on any new service, any new provider.
Riff rocks.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. If I say to you, listener, Downing Street memo, do you know what that is? I hope so. There finally has been the amount of publicity that these documents that emanate from the British government that call into grave question the decision of George W. Bush to take the country to war have finally come out. Joining me for a discussion on this is Jonathan Schwartz. He's a consultant with the group AfterDowningStreet.org. AfterDowningStreet.org. It's also their website. Now, this is a coalition of peace, veteran, and military family groups. They're calling for a resolution of inquiry to be introduced by the House Judiciary Committee into whether George W. Bush committed impeachable offenses in the lead-up to the invasion of Iraq. John Schwartz is in Chicago. John, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Now, for those people that don't know what the Downing Street memo is, now, are we talking plural here, or is it still a singular memo?
Well, it is plural. Let's start with the first one. The Downing Street memo that most people talk about is one that was released to the Times of London. When I say released, I mean leaked, and published on May 1st, about a month and a half ago. And it was the official minutes from a meeting held with all of the top people in Tony Blair's government on July 23rd, 2002. And in the minutes, the equivalent in England of the head of RCIA talked about his recent trip to the United States to talk to, we believe, George Tenet and Condoleezza Rice, although that's not certain. And he said, there was a perceptible shift in attitude. Military action was now seen as inevitable. Bush wanted to remove Saddam through military action, justified by the conjunction of terrorism and weapons of mass destruction. But the intelligence and facts were being fixed around the policy.
Now, that's the key phrase.
That's the key phrase. There's a lot of other interesting stuff in this particular memo. Jack Straw, who is the British equivalent of our Secretary of State, also speaks about how it's clear that Bush has decided he's going to go to war no matter what. So there are two important things about the memo, and then a third that's also interesting and important, although has been getting a little bit less attention. The first important thing is that the whole point of going to the UN and saying we're going to try to disarm Iraq peacefully, obviously Bush said that a million times, Blair said that a million times, it was a charade. The point of that was to try to help Tony Blair get domestic support in England for an invasion of Iraq that he'd already committed to. There was going to be a war no matter what. That's clear from these minutes. Number two, of course, is the phrase about intelligence and facts being fixed around the policy. What exactly he meant by that, we don't know. That's why our group, after DowningStreet.org, says we need a resolution of inquiry. Now, the third issue, which, as I say, has been getting less attention, but is also interesting and disturbing to hear about certainly today, is one section where they talk about there was a little discussion in Washington of the aftermath after military action. So those are the main points in this memo. Now, there have been a series of other internal government memos leaked in England. These are all British government memos, and they're all very, very interesting and corroborate everything in this memo. But this is the big one. The other things are sort of somewhat tangential with corroborating information, and they're from a little bit earlier in 2002, which indicates that they seem to say that George Bush had decided to go to war even earlier than July 2002, that it was back in like March 2002, and everyone in the British government was saying to each other, there's going to be a war. How do we pretend that we care about something beyond just a war? Oh, we're going to pretend that we care about weapons of mass destruction.
Now, we should say that the Downing Street memo, and why I prefaced my remarks at the introduction to this show about whether people knew about the Downing Street memo, something of such grave importance and even figured considerably in the British election just a month or so ago, it was virtually unknown here. And great thanks goes to Detroit Congressman John Conyers, who the day before we're taping on Friday, June 17th, on June 16th in Washington, D.C., Congressman John Conyers of Detroit convened, his colleagues, his Republican colleagues don't like to hear it be called a hearing or anything, but a forum where this information was presented. Now, Judge Schwartz, you are in Chicago, although you're a consultant to after DowningStreet.org, but it's my understanding that you're able to watch all the proceedings on C-SPAN.
That's right. I mean, I've seen the proceedings several times at this point, and, of course, talked with everyone who was there. And you're exactly right. There was little attention in the U.S. media to the Downing Street memo when it was published, as I say, on May 1st in England for quite a long time. And, in fact, the few mentions that you would see in the U.S. media were people saying, why isn't anyone mentioning this? And thanks to the work of certainly John Conyers, thanks to the work of really, at this point, tens of thousands of regular people who have been writing to the media, who have been writing to their representatives, who have been making an effort to put this onto the national agenda, it has gotten there. It's really an extraordinary thing. This is something that the media did not want to touch, Democratic politicians were interested in but couldn't get anyone to pay attention to. And so after this forum yesterday, Congressman Conyers took a letter that he had written directed to George Bush asking him some very basic questions about the Downing Street memo, whether he argues with it being a legitimate document of the British government. It's clear that it is. I mean, nobody is going to dispute it because at this point, they would have done so long ago. I mean, they're not going to dispute it because they know it's real. And other questions about what the memo says. And he had gotten this letter signed now by 122 other congressmen. It has also been signed by over 500,000 regular Americans who really have just heard about it and organized to do this, as I say, on their own, without much help from anybody else, and mostly over the Internet and just by friends and family emailing other people that they know. And he took the letter and the signatures, the 500,000 signatures, and delivered it to the White House. And
but he wasn't exactly, they didn't exactly say, welcome in, friend John or congressman. He kind of had to go to the back door, from what I understand, what I read in the press reports.
That's quite right. They were not particularly welcoming, and when the White House press spokesman was asked about this yesterday on June 16th, he said, well, there's no reason to respond to this letter because... you know, all of these issues have already been dealt with.
So well, this is Scott McClellan. Let me maybe pose to you, John Schwartz, what the president's spokesperson said. He said, essentially, this is old news. It's all these issues have been debated. John Conyers voted against the war in the first place. He's just rehashing old stuff. We're looking to the future. How do you respond to that?
Well, it really is... an extraordinary gesture of contempt. I mean, I wish I could describe it another way, what the White House press spokesman said about that. It's a gesture of contempt for regular Americans. You know, it's not just John Conyers. It's not just people in Congress who voted against the war. It's 500,000 regular Americans who are saying, we want some answers to this. And among those 500,000 people are people like Cindy Sheehan, who is a founder of Gold Star Families for Peace.
Her son, yeah, go ahead.
In Iraq.
I'm sorry, I talked right over you, which my apologies. She lost her son in Iraq, yeah.
Right. He was in the U.S. military and was killed in Iraq. At the hearing yesterday, there were several other parents whose children had been killed in Iraq who were there because they wanted answers. There was a man from England who'd come all the way from England because his son was killed in Iraq, and he wanted to be there to witness it.
Why?
And for the White House to simply say, we're not going to answer your questions, we're not going to give you any answers about how your children were killed, it's extraordinary. And frankly, let's be honest about this. These questions have never been debated in any kind of meaningful way. They've never been examined in any kind of serious way. But even if they had been, let's say they've been hashed out ad nauseum. The President of the United States works for us. If we have some questions for him, then he damn well better answer. That's the way the government of the United States works. And it just goes to show that these people... don't take what I guess we would call democracy very seriously.
Yeah, I was going to say, the way it used to work. Jonathan Schwartz is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He is a consultant with AfterDowningStreet.org. I would advise going to that website. Also, there's a lot of material on this on my website, PeterWerbe.com, WERBE.com. JohnConyers.com as well will give you information about the wonderful work that our congressman here in Detroit has done. And John Schwartz has written for The New Yorker, The New York Times, The Atlantic, Slate, Wall Street Journal, lots of other publications as well. And I love his personal website. It's tinyrevolution.com, and he wrote me that it's named after something said by George Orwell. Every joke is a tiny revolution. I like that very much. Let's look at some of the press reports. Up till recently, there was nothing. I just did a Google search a little while ago for articles, and I got up to page 10, and there was a lot more, and that's 100 right there. But what do you make of the quality of them? I mean, I know that the New York Times had this on page A10 on the day after, on when we're taping on June 17th, and it said something I should have brought it, but it said, like, anti-war groups question Bush memo. So in other words, this was attributing this essentially to partisan concerns. How do you feel about, in general, about the press coverage that John Conyers' hearings have gotten and how it's presented?
Well, let me give you a complicated answer to that.
Sure.
Some of the press coverage has been very, very good. And I would urge people who are concerned with this issue not just to write to news organizations who you think are doing a bad job when they cover it or just are ignoring it completely. I would also urge anyone, as I say, who's interested in this, to write to people who are doing a good job, because they're regular people like all of us, and they appreciate encouragement, and it does inspire them to understand that people care about this and are taking it seriously. So there's been some great reporting by Knight Ridder, which really is a fantastic news organization. They've done great work on the general issue of the war in Iraq for a long, long time. A lot of what is known about Iraq is due to Knight Ridder. There's been some good work by other people. There has also been some really truly atrocious journalism, and it's sad that we've gotten to a point in the United States where you have some news outlets that sneer at the concerns of regular Americans. Again, I have to emphasize, it's not just Democratic politicians. 500,000 Americans want to know about this. This is a matter of life and death. It's a matter of war and peace. And to say that these people are being silly or they don't deserve to be taken seriously is really...
or worse, that we're wing nuts. One of the that was one of the columns.
Oh, yeah, Dana Milbank
in the Washington Post. Yeah, yeah.
Here's the unfortunate truth of this. I think is that a lot of the most prominent media in the United States, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the networks, did an appalling job in the run up to the invasion of Iraq. It is really some of the worst journalism in the history of the United States, their coverage of the issue of weapons of mass destruction. I mean, I know from firsthand experience, trying to get reporters to cover things before the war, that they were just falling for what was obvious at the time to anybody who cared, which was just this gigantic onslaught of propaganda. And they are embarrassed as they should be, they're ashamed as they should be, and they just do not want this issue reopened. I mean, I think on a personal level, they don't want to go back and reexamine everything that they did wrong. And I appreciate that they're embarrassed, but this is a little bit bigger than their hurt feelings.
Jonathan Schwartz, you've had so much experience writing for the biggies, including the New York Times, a lot of other publications I mentioned earlier. But in crosswalk.com, I don't know why I pulled this particular one out, but this one of the people that testified at the Conyers hearing yesterday was former U.S. Ambassador Joseph Wilson, who was one of the people who exposed the fact that that these so-called nuclear, all the stuff with the tubes, whatever it was, aluminum tubes, was a bunch of hooey. But if the quote is correct here, he said, "I believed the threat to the United States posed by Saddam's weapons of mass destruction, which we all believed he had." I mean, first off, I'd like to get some corroboration he actually said that. And secondly, I didn't believe he had weapons of mass destruction. And I don't believe that Bush and those folks believed he had weapons of mass destruction. Why did people that we would think would be so savvy and know BS when they see it and hear it would have signed on for this, including a guy who's a critic of the war, U.S. Ambassador Joseph Wilson?
You know, that's an interesting, complicated question, and it's sort of hard to answer quickly. But first of all, you're absolutely right. There were many, many, many people who did not take the preposterous claims about weapons of mass destruction seriously. I was one of them. I was following this professionally. I was so frustrated with my inability to get anybody to pay attention to some of this stuff, and again, the same sort of sneering dismissal about it. But I ended up betting someone $1,000 that Iraq didn't have any banned weapons.
Ooh, I wish I would have known that guy.
Yeah, well, I wish that I'd bet more. And
did he pay?
Yeah, I'm pleased to say that he paid up.
All right. One little small candle in the terrible storm. Go ahead. Sorry.
The funny part, of course, is that I think he's the only person in the United States, you know, after all these catastrophic mistakes and this huge amount of deception, who's actually paid for it. And
really?
He has paid quite literally.
Well, so, you know, I know you agree with that. There certainly has been other people that have paid terribly for it. Well, I mean, if you just use logic, if they would have had weapons of mass destruction, the United States probably wouldn't have invaded. I mean, if they would have had the capacity to launch weapons of the type that Tony Blair mentioned and that Bush and Powell and Rumsfeld and the rest of them did, I mean, so it almost on the face of the logic, once then the United Nations inspectors got in there and it was clear they were finding nothing, and Bush, and Chirac saying, hey, why don't we wait a month? And Bush is saying, now we got to do it now. You knew that he wanted to invade before they found that, in fact, there was absolutely nothing.
Well, you know, this is a very interesting question. It's something that's really hard to answer. If I had to speculate, this is hopefully informed speculation, I think there was probably a broad range of opinions within the Bush administration and the Blair government. I think the smarter people who paid more attention to it realized that Iraq had little or nothing. I think some of the dumber people who were thinking of other things and were just hearing what other people were telling them, but, you know, probably did believe that Iraq had something. I think what they all consciously did was enormously exaggerated what they genuinely thought was the danger. I mean, for instance, in the Downing Street memo, I mean, one of the interesting passages was Saddam was not threatening his neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
His weapons of mass destruction capability was less than that of Libya, North Korea, or Iran. There are other things in some of the other six documents that have been released where the British government is talking amongst themselves and they're saying, no, the U.S. scrambling to attempt to link Iraq and al-Qaeda is frankly unconvincing. So I think it was a mixture. If I had to guess, I would say they probably thought that Iraq still had something left somewhere. But on the nuclear issue, I think most people were conscious that it was a sham.
Jonathan Short, you actually mentioned a word we haven't broadcast in quite a few minutes here, and that's the Downing Street memo, and that's what we're talking about, and that's my failure here, and we're talking about this document that came out of the British government that summarized a meeting with U.S. officials that essentially said that that George Bush, as early as July 2002, had decided to go to war against Iraq, and that they fixed the intelligence around the policy. June 7th, Bush said there was no decision made in 2002 to go to war with Iraq, and this these documents speak directly to that and refute it and expose it. People don't like to use this word. I'm pleased to use it. Expose it as a lie. There were hearings on June 16th that were convened by Congressman John Conyers. A number of people testified to all of this. Now, we're talking with John Schwartz from afterdowningstreet.org. And is this a, what do they call it, mercurial, right? I mean, this is this going to be this big blip here, and then it kind of goes away? What? How much legs, in the common expression these days, does this all have, do you think?
Well, I think that's up to us. I think that's up to citizens of the United States who decide whether or not we care about whether it matters, whether our government is honest about matters of war and peace. You know, I several times already have brought up the parents who were at the hearings whose children had been killed in Iraq. I've been in close contact with them and the organizations for these events. It's very difficult to talk to people who've been through this experience and say to them, well, you know, I'm just going to go start watching more TV now and stop paying attention to all of this stuff and not be involved anymore. If we decide to make it important, I think what's happened over the past month demonstrates that we, you know, all working together, all of us little Lilliputians, have the power to really make things happen. You know, we don't have any excuse to say, like, well, there's just nothing we can do about it. There is something that we can do about it. So life is difficult to predict. Politics is a very difficult thing to predict as well. And when you bring life and politics together, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, well, we should cue... I was going to say we should cue the music with Patti Smith. Patti Smith's People Have the Power. Well, let me just give real quickly, because we're running out of time, that people do have the power, and we don't have to be just passive spectators to what affects all of us so gravely and other people as well. And that is that yesterday, a delegation of us went to visit Michigan Congressman Sander Levin, who voted against the war way back, but had not signed on to the Conyers resolution, along with, I think it was at the time, like 122 other congressmen, that there be this inquiry into all of this. And we announced that we were going to be there, and by the time, and you know, we were mad that he hadn't, and by the time we got there, he'd signed it.
Yeah.
He had signed on to it, and his aide, Sandy Levin, was in Washington, and his aide said, oh, it was just sitting on his desk, and he finally got around to signing it. Well, it was on a lot of desks, I'm sure, and the reason that he got around to signing it, because he knew a bunch of fairly concerned, almost angry constituents were coming out to visit him.
Yeah.
So, there are things that we can do. We can be the active players in history and not just the objects that get booted around by the big guys.
You know, like, money does talk in politics. There's no question. And it's hard to make yourself louder than money. It's hard for regular people to talk louder than money. But it can happen. And it's just a matter of us getting ourselves organized and doing it. So I very much encourage people to visit the website of the organization I'm involved with, which is afterdowningstreet.org. Certainly go to johnconyers.com, which is Representative Conyers' site, which will have all of the latest information about these kinds of things. And make sure you keep in touch with the media. Make sure that you give reasoned but polite and constructive comments to reporters and to their editors. And, you know, as I say, all of us Lilliputians working together, all the little people working together, if we do it right, can make things happen.
Yeah, and I was just looking at this other story that just came across the wire here. Bush seeks to calm anxieties about Iraq. Facing growing pressure to bring troops home from Iraq, President Bush is launching a public relations campaign to try to calm anxieties about the war. I think the gravest anxieties are his political ones. Well, maybe that's not true, because a lot of people we know have people over there. Certainly the people of Iraq have grave anxieties about their country being occupied and the war that's going on there. But Jonathan Schwartz, I like the imagery, if anybody's forgetting who the Lilliputians are. Those were the little teeny people that tied down the huge Gulliver and Gulliver's travels. So to fellow that's a hard one to say, Lilliputians, don't let up on the pressure. Keep Bush anxious. His poll numbers are extraordinarily low right now, particularly on the war. Jonathan Schwartz has been my guest. He's a consultant with AfterDowningStreet.org. His personal website is tinyrevolution.com. It comes from George Orwell's little quote, "Every joke is a tiny revolution." Thanks so much for being with me on The Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks for having me.
WRIF.com.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 482-220.
Bill Bonds with a commercial. If you're near or farsighted and you want to throw away those glasses forever, I know a doctor you should see. Dr. Escombati. Phone number 1-877. Then the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E. 1-877-UC-MORE.
The equipment, the finest high-tech equipment ever made. Price, $999 per eye. So don't fall for those $200 prices you hear being tossed around on the radio. Cows don't fly. Neither do those prices. Unless your daddy is an eye doctor and you're getting a freebie. Dr. S. Kambadi, no doctor we know of has a better success rate. Procedure is fast, safe, cost $999 per eye, virtually painless, you're in and out, maybe 40 minutes, procedure itself, maybe 5. When it's over, you'll want to kiss your glasses goodbye and hug the doctor. Or maybe you guys will just want to give him a high five, shake hands with him, walk away and see a whole new world. See ya.
Anglers, get ready to cast your line for big money. The OSI Pro Series WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Championship Series is underway, and there's still time to enter to win the $1,500 Series Championship. Sign up now for the Bass Championship going out of Lake Erie Metro Park on July 30th. Slots will fill up fast, so get your entry in now. Compete for thousands of dollars in cash and prizes, including the DMF Bait Award for the kid under 16 landing the largest fish on live bait. It's all going to be given away to the best fishing team in town, so sign up now by calling 248-591-6841 or go to WRIF.com for an entry form. There will be fun for everyone at the post-event party at Big Al Sports Grill, so call 248-591-6841 to become the OSI Pro Series WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today. Brought to you by OSI Pro Series, the DMF Bait Company, Big Al Sports Grill, and 101 WRIF.
Every day, employers search for people skilled in today's technology. Are you ready for a change to a new career? Make a difference for yourself by calling the ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-396-6622. Find out how an ITT Tech can help you prepare for a career in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Now is your chance to make a difference for yourself, to start a new path to a career involving technology. Find out what an ITT Tech education can offer you. Call 1-800-396-6622 for an ITT Tech brochure. Classes are forming now, so call ITT Tech at 1-800-396-6622. That's 1-800-396-6622.
Hey, Tigers fans, this summer, why sit at home when you could sit at home? Fight, that is. Now is a great time to catch all the fun and excitement happening at every Detroit Tigers home game. You'll see plenty of homers by Pudge Rodriguez, Dimitri Young, Carlos Guillen, and all your favorite players. But a trip to Comerica Park means more than just baseball. While the Tigers are driving home runs, you could drive home in a brand new car during the Chevy Cobalt Drive One Home Giveaway, sponsored by your Detroit area Chevy dealers. Just buy a ticket to select Friday or Saturday night home games, and you could drive one out of here. Looking for a surefire hit? Hey, don't miss Friday and Saturday night fireworks, sponsored by Pepsi and Verizon Wireless. And with a weekend value pack, that's four tickets, four hot dogs, and four Pepsis for just $59. Hey, you'll want to bring everyone from home. So for great giveaways like autographed balls, bobbleheads, collector cards, and jerseys, and for great baseball, this summer, catch a Tigers game. For tickets, call 248-25-TIGER or visit DetroitTigers.com and make Comerica Park your home away from home game.
Do you have dreams of diamonds and dolls? Well, dream no more. The big game's hottest star-studded celebrity party is coming. A party the likes of which Detroit has never seen. Diamonds and Dolls, Sunday, July 10th at 7, the nightclub in downtown Pontiac. Party all night long with super sexy co-hosts, including 2002 Maxim Cover Girl and 1998 Playmate of the Year.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. I think all of you who've listened for any amount of time know what kind of concern I have for the environment. Things aren't going well, and we've done any number of shows. A couple of the shows in the past have been with Jim Motovalli. He is the editor of E! The Environmental magazine. And since I just realized, time goes by, that the magazine is celebrating its 15th anniversary, it probably was during his tenure as editor, but we can ask him about that. There's a brand new book out that E! The Environmental magazine has published through Plume Publishers. It's called Green Living, the E! Magazine Handbook for Living Lightly on the Earth. Jim Motovalli, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Great to be on, Peter.
Yeah, and congratulations on 15 years of E.
Yeah, well, we didn't think we'd make it this far, but we're glad to be still up and breathing and breathing relatively unpolluted air.
Well, you know...
As you are in Detroit.
Yeah, oh yeah. Where are you guys located?
We're in Connecticut.
You're right. Okay. So you're in that big, what do they call those big?
The Boss Wash Corridor.
There you go. There you go. We'll be telling you as we go along about how you can connect up with E-Magazine as well. But this is a brand new book. It's kind of a how-to book. I usually don't think much. I tell publicists, don't send me how-to books. It's usually how to improve yourself or something like this. But this is something that, A, can be done easily by individuals, and, B, really has to be done and on a mass level. Tell us the genesis of Green Living and what brought it about.
Well, the book really grows out of the Green Living section that we have in the magazine. And we're bi-monthly, so we come out every other month. And we have articles that are on health and travel and managing your money, all the different things that and also very much having to do with your house and maintaining your home. And the book is that sort of that expanded times 10. With all the information you could possibly want. We get into even stuff like caring for babies and children and pets. We have a whole chapter on pets, organic gardening, energy, and we can talk a lot about energy because you're the Motor City there.
Yeah.
There is a whole chapter on transportation, planet-friendly cars and transit and dusting off that bicycle. And we have a lot on recycling and how it works and in general, a lot of the things that we talk about in the book are not just, and of course we talk about this in the magazine too, it's not just things you do because you're a virtuous person. A lot of environmental advances will also benefit you financially. A great example would be the hybrid car, which saves you quite a bit of money on gasoline. And in addition to that, many states offer advantages for hybrids. One of them is letting them drive in the HOV lanes on many highways.
Wait, what's HOV?
It's the preferred lane that's reserved for cars with more than one person in it.
Oh, yeah. We don't have that in Michigan. But, yeah, I've seen that in the East particularly.
And they have in California. They have it in a lot of places. And often, if you're a single person driving a hybrid, you can use the lane.
Huh.
And you can get tax subsidies in many places, sometimes from state governments, sometimes even from local governments for purchasing a hybrid. So you add up all these things, there's a number of benefits. And, of course, when gas is $2.50 a gallon, people are feeling the pinch. And getting 60 or 70 miles per gallon out of your vehicle is definitely a big plus that will very quickly add up and erase the extra cost of the vehicle in the first place.
Well, I have to. I always like to be honest, and because you know, I could hide. This is radio. I could hide a lot of stuff. But my wife and I bought a fairly large. I can say what it is. Ford Taurus sedan. They get terrible mileage, and we got it a couple of years ago. And I think gas was still like $1.39. And I'm thinking, whoa, you know, what a mistake it's going to be. You know, I'm thinking, well, maybe we should just sell it and get a hybrid or something like that.
Well, you wouldn't even have to change your car manufacturer because Ford now makes the Escape hybrid, and you can get 35 to 40 miles per gallon out of a small SUV, which is, I think, a real advance.
Yeah, well, I actually was overwhelmed almost, and I'll go back to that word. Usually overwhelmed just means you're just like an exaggeration of how much information is in here. But in a sense, it actually did overwhelm me. I mean, to the extent that if you tried to be a good environmental citizen of the planet, which so many of us want to do, it could almost drive you crazy because the major culture and society kind of militates against that. So you almost have to think every minute of the day environmentally.
Yeah, we don't want to overwhelm people. And I think we sort of err on the side of providing solutions over detailing the problems because the problems can be pretty great. I think people don't often look at the labels of the products they buy. But they would find, if they did, that a lot of the products there have been implicated in various things. Some of them are carcinogens. Some of them are dangerous. I mean, I think one of the most eye-opening chapters in the book is the one on personal care, where we talk about products as mundane as makeup and nail polish, which contain formaldehyde and all kinds of... I'm not saying any specific one contains formaldehyde. I'm just saying some of the personal care products contain very dangerous substances.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about this concern? This always does strike me. It's easy. Like your book, Jim Motovalli, that you wrote with the other editors of the Environmental magazine, Green Living, gives all these hints on how we can live more environmentally. Well, as the subtitle says, live lightly on the earth, which we should do as a species. The only problem that I ever have is that the good people, the people that will consider this, that will be alerted to the dangers of the erosion of our environment, they'll do these things and they say, okay, I've done my duty as a good citizen of the planet, where, you know, 85% of the people are just throwing their McDonald's wrappers out the window.
Well, an interesting thing, Peter, is that 85% of Americans actually consider themselves environmentalists. So I think throwing the McDonald's wrapper out the window is one of the few things they don't do, because they've got it through their heads that that's not a good thing for the planet. And you have groups like Keep America Beautiful that tell people not to litter. And I think Americans have got that message. And they've got the idea that they should recycle and take their recycle bin to the curb. But what we're really talking about here is going beyond that, that really being an environmentalist has a few more dimensions to it. And as you said, when you read the book, you can get almost overwhelmed by how many different aspects of it there are. But we're not expecting everybody to do everything in the book. That would be pretty hard to do. But there's probably specific chapters of it that you can pick up on and make some really positive changes that will leave you feeling better, that won't end up costing you more. An example would be, say, organic food. Until fairly recently, organic food was pretty expensive and hard to find. You had to go to specialist stores, and the markup would leave you dizzy.
Right.
But today, with national chains of health food and also organic products in almost every supermarket at not particularly high prices, you don't really have to stretch yourself to do this, and the health benefits of eating organic are pretty well established.
Sure. Well, I don't think I posed my question as well as I should, in that throwing the McDonald's wrapper out the window, I think, threw a curveball to you. What I meant to say was that people can, in their own lives, make these alterations that that will improve their life and at least on a, you know, on a small level, help with what's the damage being done to the planet. But that unless there's a society-wide change, like for instance, only limited use of styrofoam. I mean, as you know, I maybe even learned this from you, that there's a million styrofoam cups thrown into the ocean every single day. And
sounds about right.
Yeah. So there is a product that should not be on the market, not be easily available as a throwaway item. So maybe you or I will even bring our own containers to a takeout store. But as long as it's in social usage, it's not going to affect much. So I think this is a good starting point, but we need, and I know you agree with this, society-wide changes, and so we can live lightly on the planet.
Yeah, well, I'll give you an example. For when we buy things from online retailers, we get a large box that contains styrofoam peanuts and a tiny little item.
Right.
And I'm sure we all wonder what to do with those things. Some companies have come up with biodegradable peanuts that are made from corn or something like that.
Cornstarch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that to me is a no-brainer kind of product that is equivalent of when you throw those styrofoam cups in the ocean and they last thousands of years. If we can replace that kind of thing with a product that has the same insulating properties as styrofoam, but biodegrades, we've made a huge advance.
Yeah, I should tell people this cornstarch-based peanuts is that if you have any doubt, just wet your fingers, and if it begins to kind of melt under them,
yeah,
really,
I think you probably could eat them.
Well, you could. And the other thing is, I don't know why anybody would. I don't know. I was sending my dad something, so I used ones that had been sent to me. But you can just lay them out on the lawn and sprinkle them, and they'll absolutely dissolve.
Now, there are people who argue that we have infinite amount of landfill space in America, and there was a famous New York Times article that said it didn't matter whether we recycled because we can dump things into landfills forever. But for one thing, that is ignoring the resource potential of all of our garbage. I think we in our recycling chapter we get into this a bit, but I was just in Sweden for a week, And it's amazing. You know, landfills generally issue methane, which is actually a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. It's like 20 times worse.
Mm-hmm.
So normally that just gets emitted from the landfill and collects in the atmosphere. In Sweden, they run their cars on it. And you can buy biogas almost anywhere in Sweden now. And there's Volvos that are bi-fuel, gasoline and biogas. And it's cheaper than gasoline, so it's a lot of people are switching to that.
Tell us a little, if you would, about hemp. I was, since they're all the, you know, suddenly marijuana, what we call marijuana, is back in the news with medical marijuana, but what's really, I haven't heard much about in a few years, and there was a big movement around it, was industrial-grade hemp that that isn't anything you can get intoxicated with, but has historically, particularly, and apparently again, great commercial use.
Yeah, well, industrial-grade hemp has... is absent the ingredient THC, which is the active ingredient that would make it marijuana. And it's definitely not something you can smoke, but it's a very versatile fiber that we used quite a bit before World War II. Actually, even during World War II, people were growing hemp for victory. Because traditionally we think of it as rope, but it can be made into many different garments. And there's a lot of serious adherence of hemp, and they make all kinds of things out of it, including beer. I never understood how that that exactly worked.
Fermented, but, I guess you're there.
But hemp has only been illegal in the U.S. really since World War II, so it goes back to like 8,000 B.C. It's probably the longest used fiber in the United States.
The hempsters always make a big deal about the fact that the sails of the USS Constitution were hemp and the ropes were hemp. And the
George Washington was quite a proponent of it, as was Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah. Well, it was quite a crop up until really the 20th century.
Well, the funny thing, Peter, is right now we have a $100 million hemp industry in the U.S. without being able to grow it here. All of our hemp is imported because it's illegal to grow in the U.S. And I think, unfortunately, there's a number of farmers, particularly in the Midwest, who are saying, why should the Canadians or the Indians or other countries make all this money by selling hemp to Americans when we could grow it here and it would be a very successful crop?
And is it used for anything other than garments, the Canadian hemp, for instance?
Canadian hemp, I think that's probably the major use of it, is in clothing. But I think there are, like I mentioned, it's used in beer. It's in, I think, an ingredient in some food products.
Hmm. I have a hemp shirt with a little metal marijuana buttons. But I've heard that when you have hemp clothing, you've essentially bought an heirloom for your children. I mean, the durability of this, and in fact, it's very heavy material and has to be combined with cotton, or it's extraordinarily rough and thick. But I'm sure all the hempsters are probably heading towards their email to remind us of the multiple uses. I mean, they have hemp oil and they got tons of stuff. But I always suspect with a lot of these people, it's just kind of, what do they call it? A Trojan horse that they don't really want to wear. They want to smoke it.
But well, I think you're definitely right about that, Peter.
We won't go.
A lot of the hemp advocates really want to legalize marijuana. That's definitely true.
But Gaia bless them. Hey, my guest on the Peter Werby Show is Jim Motovalli. He's the editor of E! The Environmental Magazine, and he and the other editors have put together Green Living, the E! Magazine Handbook for Living Lightly on the Earth. It's published by Plume. And tell us now, I said I was going to say later how you can, in fact, in the back of the book, they say we'll send you a free trial issue of E! The Environmental Magazine. Can we offer that to our listeners?
Oh, definitely. And the best place to fulfill that offer is on our website at www.emagazine.com. And e-magazine is all one word. And there's a whole page on the book with a sample chapter. And there's that offer to get a free sample issue, which we'll sell you.
Good. And I have a link on my site, peterwerby.com, as well. Going through the book, it's almost, as we said earlier, staggering that the amount of information that's on here. And I was looking for, things, a friend of mine called me. And he was always living in an apartment living in downtown Detroit, and he moved out to the suburbs. And he said to me, Peter, he said, how do you keep the weeds off your lawn? And I laughed, and he said, I know you never thought I'd be asking you that. And I said, well, if you see a real nice lawn that only has grass blades in it, almost always it's chemicals. And if you come look at my lawn, you'll see lots of weeds in it because we don't use them.
Well, I'm exactly the same way. If you look at my lawn, you'll see tons of clover. And I've never understood what was wrong with clover in the first place. it's a great plant. It stays green very easily, so you don't get a lot of brownouts during heat waves.
Is there anything in Green Living about...
Oh, yes. We have a whole chapter. One of our longest chapters is on organic gardening and lawn care. And we've done a whole lot of writing on that in E. And I firmly believe that natural lawn care is the best way to have a lawn. And we also talk about alternatives to lawns. There's all kinds of ground covers you can put in that are practically no maintenance, because we definitely support the idea of you're not spending your whole weekend with lawnmowers and spraying pesticides. So I don't think that's the way people really want to spend their weekends.
What's the downside of having Mr. Lawn Poison? I don't think they call him that. Mr. Lawn Poison come out and killing all your weeds.
Well, I was doing a radio show recently, and somebody called in and said they don't want to use any products, but they don't want bugs. I said, it's not really achievable. I mean, bugs are a natural part of any lawn. You're going to have to sort of adopt to having insects in your lawn. And it's unnatural to have them be sort of living deserts. I don't know why you would want that exactly. And he said he was worried about ticks, and I said, well, just keep your lawn relatively well mowed, and I don't think ticks are a major problem.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I was going to just say that usually we get advised, rather than getting that marine crew cut, that buzz cut, to let it grow to 3 inches, and a lot of times
and that simply involves adjusting the wheels on your lawnmower to the highest setting.
Let me tell people something that occurred in our life that we never did use chemical pesticides, but our dog suddenly came down with this autoimmune disease. And barely survived, and we talked to our vet, and he said that he used to see one of these cases a year, and now he's seeing one in two a month. And he said that two things. One, he thought that dogs were being over-vaccinated, and there's a way you can test to see whether you should do it every year. But the other thing he said, there is such prevalent chemicals on lawns and in parks, and dogs are obviously all over those.
Right, and you know who else is really close to the ground? Children.
There you go.
Babies in particular. And this is an interesting point. And when I see these warning, we've just sprayed signs on people's lawns, and then I see their kids throwing balls and babies crawling, and this is not a necessarily very healthy thing.
Mm-hmm. Now I have a listener that is in Boulder, and he is a big advocate of the bicycle. You mentioned earlier about dusting off that bicycle, which is a subtitle of one of your last chapters about getting around. And I was thinking, I confessed publicly to driving a big gas hog. And I live literally a mile away from, so you're saying, why don't I even walk? I already walked a couple miles today. I don't know why I just didn't walk to work.
Well, isn't this funny, Peter, that we are in America, we have the largest bicycle ownership in the world and the lowest per capita use of those bicycles.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so you probably have a bike, you just don't ride it.
Well, mine is actually in parts. I used to do a lot of sport riding and could take it all apart. One year I took it apart and never really got it together. But there's been a number of factors. In fact, somebody came over to my house in a, what are those guys? Prius? Is that the name of the car?
Toyota Prius.
Yeah, Toyota Prius. And we started talking about this stuff. And this guy said, well, you drive to work, in the summer. And I went, like that. So, bikes, I see bike messengers in New York City, but there's a lot of places. I mean, we don't live in a bike-friendly culture either.
That's another thing I saw in Sweden, which was so interesting. I was just there for a week, that I went to a medium-sized city, Västerås, which is, much smaller than a city like Detroit. It's only like 113,000 people. And yet it has a network of bike trails that covers the entire city, some of them even with traffic lights. Can you imagine traffic lights on a bike trail?
Well, and I know I rode in the Netherlands, and they expect you very, very strongly to follow the traffic signals.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
But you know, that's exactly what I meant about that. You know, you or I can. I mean, I was thinking about what route would I take here, and there's a couple of the streets, and I'm thinking, man, I'm not real fond of riding a bike on that. That I want to ride a bike, but society doesn't create the context to encourage it.
Well, that's one thing, and let me just say about one of the things we do in the Green Living book is we give people lots of contact information for organizations that will support a green activity like biking. We'll talk about the biking associations that can give you maps of trails and get you actually on the trail, or online forums where you can share information about maintaining your bike, all that kind of thing. That is sort of the reason we never do it, because we think it's too esoteric or we don't have access to the information. This book is really about giving you access to information.
Mm-hmm. And it does, incredibly so. The book is Green Living. My guest is Jim Motovalli, the editor of E, the environmental magazine that issued the book through Plume Magazine. And, you know, you indicated that even if you don't have a great consciousness for the planet, which we all should have, I mean, it is Mother Earth, after all, there are some direct, as you indicated earlier, financial gains to be held, or to be gained, rather, by adopting some of these. But also,
can I give you a great one of those?
Sure, go ahead.
Compact fluorescent bulbs. And some of you may have had, some of the listeners may have had contact with compact fluorescents, where they appeared to be very expensive and strangely shaped and gave off this weird sickly light. Well, that is all old news. All those things have been changed. The prices have come down a lot. The light is a lot better and more natural. And the savings is incredible. These things last like 9 or 10 years. And in some cases, you can get subsidies on them through your local utility. I certainly was able to do that. And you can buy not only the bulbs, but the lamps through the utility. And I just got incredible deals. It was cheaper than Walmart buying these things. And they're going to last like 20 years. And the cost of operating them is a fraction of an incandescent bulb. That's just one thing you could do to your house in a day that would make a big difference in your energy bills.
Well, yeah, all right. So I've made up for it by every time something goes out, I'm replacing it with the fluorescent bulb. So I've made up for having a gas guzzler, at least pulled.
I don't think a Taurus is really the worst gas guzzler.
No,
you don't have an SUV.
No. We're almost out of time, but what I was going to say about bicycling. Not only do you save money, not only are you not polluting the planet. But the more, you know, what are we talking about? People in America and people in Detroit. Detroit, one time, I think we lost to Houston last year. It was like the fattest city in the country. So, a lot, you know, get your butt out there and walk and pedal. And
Well, I would think that some of the cities out there, some of the towns out there are pretty bike-friendly. Ann Arbor seems
sure.
like a pretty friendly bicycle town to me. I
it
certainly
is.
Ride around Ann Arbor and Southfield and Auburn Hills. I mean, what's wrong with bikes there?
I don't know. Southfield, as soon as you said that, I was thinking about riding on Southfield Road, but that's another story. Well, we're out of time, and there's so much here that we have literally barely scratched the surface of the information and how you can live lightly on the earth. That's a subtitle of Green Living, the e-magazine handbook for living lightly on the earth. It's by the editors of E, the environmental magazine. Jim Motovalli has been my guest, and again, you can go to the website. We've got about 10 seconds. Tell me the website one more time where you can get a free copy.
Emagazine.com, all one word.
Thank you so much, Jim Motovalli.
Thank you, Peter.
This is WRIF.com. Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391.
Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now, 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391.
Motor City Harley Davidson Harley Fest 2005, presented by 101 WRIF, Molson, and Jerome Duncan Ford. Your chance to nab a 2005 Harley Davidson Custom XL 883 Sportster.
Yeah.
Then park it in the driveway next to a sweet new Ford Harley Davidson F250 truck, and a glove box stuffed with $5,000 in cold hard cash.
Compliments of Rock Financial.
Just keep your radio locked on 101 The Rift to win. Along with tickets to see Tesla Friday, June 17th. Also, listen for details on Harley Bike Nights around the Motor City, where you can grab a key in person. Harley Fest 2005, presented by Motor City Harley Davidson.
Feel the freedom at the number one dealer, located in Farmington Hills.
Molson,
making friends in 1786.
Jerome Duncan Ford,
Michigan's number one Ford dealer.
Security provided by Gallagher Security. Trained professionals for crowd safety and management.
101 WRIF. Riff Rock.
Do you have dreams of diamonds and dolls? Well, dream no more.
The big game's hottest star-studded celebrity party is coming. A party the likes of which Detroit has never seen.
Diamonds and Dolls, Sunday, July 10th at 7, the nightclub in downtown Pontiac.
Party all night long with super sexy co